a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee of the Newton City Council. I'm Greg Schwartz, chairman of the committee. I'll introduce some of my colleagues. Just before I do so, I want to tell you that this hearing is going to be audio taped, but not videotaped. Or we are videotaped. We're videotaped as well. So welcome. To my right, in the front row, is Rick Lipoff, vice chairman of the committee and counselor-at-large from Ward 8. To his right is Jake Auchincloss, counselor-at-large for Ward 3, 4-2. And behind them is Chris Markowitz, ward counselor from Ward 4. To my left, we have Andrea Kelly, counselor-at-large from Ward 3, and Maria Greenberg, ward counselor from Ward 1. And sitting just to her left is Mark Laredo, president of the council, as well as counselor-at-large from Ward 7. We're joined by city staff. We have Shauna Sullivan from the clerk's office to my right. To her right is Neil Cronin, senior planner from the planning department. To his right is Katie Wewall, planning associate with the planning department. To her right is Wita Young, our city acting solicitor. And under the screen is Jen Kyra, our chief planner. We're also joined by Jeannie Fairley, our ADA coordinator, and pretty soon we'll be joined again by Amanda Berman, our director of housing and community development. And I believe later in the meeting we'll be joined by the head of the Department of Planning, Barney Heath. So, and we've been joined by Rebecca Walker Grossman, counselor-at-large from Ward 7, not a member of the committee, but a member of the board. So we're going to get started. Our first item tonight is simply a withdrawal. It's item 420-18, a petition to allow multifamily dwellings at 424-432 Cherry Street. And this is Dennis Cameron, CRM of Management, LLC. Petition for special permit site plan approval to convert an existing single-family dwelling to a three-story, six-residential unit building, and that is going to be there's a request to withdraw without prejudice. So at this time, if the councilors on the committee could give me a show of hands, all those in favor of allowing a withdrawal without prejudice, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, with one absent.
Chairman, I just have a question.
Yes, sir.
Do we know why it was withdrawn? I'm just curious.
I think my understanding is that they're doing some more work on it and they're going to resubmit in a little bit.
That's correct. Some of the information was not complete and they're revising some of their plans and will intend to refile.
That's great. Thank you.
Good question, though. Second item on our agenda is 481-18, and this is a special permit to amend a previous special permit, 176-16. So I'll read into the record. Catherine Grenzebach, and Roman Wolfsdorf petition for special permit, site plan approval, and extension of non-conforming use to amend special permit number 176-16 to allow the addition of dormers to the attic level where 3.5 stories exist and 2.5 stories is allowed at 47 Lewis Street in Ward 1. In a multi-residence one district. Are we joined tonight by, would you like to come down to the podium to present as briefly as you'd like the petition? Just state your name and address for the record.
Sure. My name is Ronan Wolfsdorf. I'm joined here by my wife at the back, Catherine Grenzebach, and we are at 47 Lewis Street in Newton normally. We were here a couple of years ago and applied for the special permit, and we're approved. The issue that arose is that when we started to build, the builder noticed that the designer architect had made a miscalculation. So the builder, being a good guy, alerted us to this, and then we promptly went to the building department, raised the issue, and after some conversations, it became clear that we needed to address it, and so that's what we're doing. I don't know what else to say. Basically, I think if it's not clear, the issue is that The architect designer in the FAR calculation previously, originally, did not have the right measurements and so failed to observe that we were then and are now in excess of the allowable FAR. And so what we're petitioning for is to continue the non-conforming use and add a little bit of space so that we can put two dormers in there. We have a two-family on Lewis Street. Naturally, there are tenants downstairs. We live above. And we have an expanding family, four children, and just want a little more space. There are quite a number of two families on the street. It's a mixed zone in that regard. And most of them, in general and adjacent to us, have dormers. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Anybody from the public? Oh, sorry. Planning, you want to quickly comment on this? I know it's a pretty brief comment that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Mr. Wolfsdorf stated, this is a special permit site plan approval to amend Council Order 176-16 and to further extend the non-conforming floor area ratio from 0.52 to 0.53, where 0.48 is the maximum allowed as of right. As the petitioner stated, the petitioner received Special Permit 176-16 to further increase the nonconformity of the structure with respect to the number of stories, as the structure is 3.5 stories, where 2.5 is the maximum allowed. However, an incorrect FAR calculation was not caught, and the structure is nonconforming with respect to FAR and requires additional relief.
Thank you, Mr. Cronin. Is there anyone from the public here wishing to speak on this item? Okay. Any comments from the councillors? Is there a motion to close the public hearing? Councillor Greenberg has made a motion to close the public hearing. All those in favor of closing the public hearing, raise your hand. Councillor Achenbach, great. 7-0 with one absent. Motion to approve. Councillor Greenberg, thank you. So, any comments on this? We approved it 23-0 as a full council a couple of years ago. Basically, no changes to the plans. It's simply just a miscalculation. And just so the public understands, and anybody who might be watching, so these FAR calculations are done by the architect and the petitioner's contractor and architect, and essentially are taken as facts, right? I mean, nobody goes out there to recalculate them. So sometimes this happens that we later get an update that it's slightly incorrect.
That's correct. What we have is we go by the plans that are submitted to us, and sometimes there are incorrections with the FAR and complex calculations.
Right. All right. So we have a board order in front of us. Essentially, if I understand correctly, pretty much the same as what we had before. This is findings that the FAR is not substantially more detrimental than the existing non-conforming structures in the neighborhood because the square footage increase is minimal, and that is one of the required findings. And the second finding, increase in the FAR is consistent with and not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood, as the proposed dormers are in keeping with the character. So that's fine. Any changes? Okay, let's go to the conditions. Are straightforward, I think.
Standard conditions, Mr. Chairman.
Great. All right, so there's a motion before us to approve this order. All those in favor, raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And one abstaining. This is not. This is Lewis. Okay, so you're all set. The council will act on this at our next full meeting. Okay? All right. Moving on to item 479-18. This is regarding 63 Cherry Street. This is Lino Goncalves, petition for special permit site plan approval to raise the roof of the existing 2.5-story structure, six-story house, and add an oversized front and rear dormers to the attic level, creating a third story where 2.5 is allowed at 63 Cherry Street in Ward 3 in a district zone, single residence three. Is the petitioner here? Come on down. State your name and address for the record and make your presentation.
Lino Gonzalez, good evening. I'm here with my wife, Lauren. Right now we live in Boston in 800 square feet, and we're having our first baby in less than a month, so I convinced my wife that Newton is the best place to live. I grew up in West Newton on Grant Street, and my grandfather actually owned this home, and we were fortunate enough to buy it from family. My great-grandmother actually owned the three-family next to it, so my family's been there since the 60s, so definitely going to be a great thing for us to raise our newborn there. And obviously with a newborn, we're going to need a little bit more space in the house. The ceilings on the first floor are 7 feet tall, or 7 feet and 4 inches. Second floor is, like, I would argue, just about 7 feet, if not under. So the attic space, our great architect, Nick, recommended that we use it to make a better quality of life for us. So our proposal is to create an oversized front and rear dormer, also making it a full third story, and that's why we're here today.
Great. Did either the rest of you want to add anything, or no? Okay. No?
Yes, my name is Vic Landry, I'm the architect.
If you could speak into the microphone, that'd be great. Thank you.
My name is Vic Landry, I'm the architect. Exactly what Lino said, we're here for the third floor addition. We couldn't keep the existing ridge line and still get enough head height up on the third floor, which is the reason that we have to increase the height. And then the front rear dormers, to make the space really usable, there's no way to really make the space usable without the new dormers on both the front and the rear.
Great, okay.
Oh, well, actually, I have one thing to add. So my husband took me around the neighborhood to meet the neighbors, and we got a bunch of signatures, too, just to make sure everyone kind of knew what our plans were.
Do you have signatures, I'm sorry, from some neighbors?
From neighbors, yeah.
Great. Do you want to submit that, or do you...
Sure.
Yeah? Great. All right. Good. And if you'd like to sit down, please feel free. I'm not sure how much time we have. I'm the only doctor in the room, too, so I'm just going to hold on that one. All right. So we have planning. Mr. Cronin, do you want to make... comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the petitioner stated, this is special permit site plan approval to allow a three-story dwelling and to allow waivers to the dimensions of dormers. When reviewing this request, the council should consider whether the specific site is an appropriate location for the proposed three-story structure. The proposed three-story structure, as developed and operated, will not adversely affect the neighborhood. Three-story structure, as proposed, will not create a nuisance or a serious hazard to vehicles or pedestrians. And access to the site over streets is appropriate for the number and types of vehicles involved. For a little context, this is a quick aerial of the subject property. To the to the top of the screen is the Waltham city line, and to the bottom of the screen to the south is West Newton Square. This is the current and existing and proposed site plan. The structure, as you can see, is towards the front of the lot, and it has a detached garage at the rear of the lot. And these are the existing and proposed front elevations. The proposed is on the right, and the existing are on the left. The petitioner is proposing to increase the height of the roof by approximately 4.5 feet and add dormers to the front and rear of the structure that are greater than what the ordinance allows. The front dormer is what is known as an Nantucket dormer, and the rear dormer is a typical shed dormer. This is the existing and proposed left and right elevations. As you can see on the proposed, on the right side of the screen, the increase in roof height. Now, the planning department observed three-story structures in the neighborhood as well as oversized dormers. For these reasons, and also the petition will remain compliant with building height and floor area ratio, staff believes that the three-story structure as proposed will not adversely affect the neighborhood. That's the end of the presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Cronin. Is there anyone from the public who is here to speak on this item? No? Okay. All right. Well, at this time, we would entertain a motion to close public hearing. Councilor Kelly, so moved. All those in favor of closing the public hearing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And a motion to approve is from Councillor Kelly. So any questions or comments from the councillors? Councillor Kelly, since you made the motion, do you want to go first, and then we'll go to Councillor Crossley?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Because this is in my ward and very close to where I live, I did want to speak for why I think this is a fine idea, and I will be voting to approve it, having made the motion. I agree with the planning department's findings that in this neighborhood there is no consistent height or scale. Many structures are taller than this. Many structures have dormers that exceed the 50% of the exterior wall behind. I know right next door, right across the street and a few houses down, there are taller, bigger structures. Also, this has been had a historic review and it was approved, so I think this plan is something that we should, this special permit is something that I hope we approve. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Kelly. Councillor Crossley.
I agree with Councillor Kelly. I was contacted by the petitioner, so I did review these plans earlier, and I asked one question, and I'd love to have that question just simply answered by the planning department for the record. The raising of the roof creates a third story. The area under the third level, or I should say, creates a third level that's usable. The area under the third level is more than two-thirds of the area of the floor below, which is what, if it's two-thirds or under the area of the floor below, it is considered a two-and-a-half-story structure. Two-thirds of the area is livable. That's under, that's over the story below. So I just want to, I believe there's something about this. This is about continuing a non-conforming three-story condition because of the lay of the land. But I wonder if you could just explain that to us, because I think it's an unusual condition.
So just to clarify, are you saying that the current building is a non-conforming 2.5?
No, 2.5 is conforming. I believe because of the lay of the land, you have a three-story presentation toward the rear of the structure. I want to understand the lot. Let me put it more simply.
Is it a non-conforming three-story from the back currently?
So what is it that it gives us permission in the special permit granting authority to allow a third level that is more than two-thirds of the area of the floor below?
Because otherwise it might need a variance.
I just want to ask the question that way. Yeah.
Are we allowed to allow a third story in this particular case by special permit, and if so, why?
The ordinance outlines that three-story structures are allowed by special permit.
Even if the area under the roof is more than two-thirds of the floor below it, is that what you're asking?
So it doesn't have to do with the three-story presentation in the rear of the building. It's simply asking for three stories by special permit.
Correct.
Okay.
So there's the three-story relief, and then there's also the dormer relief.
Right.
Greater than 50%.
Okay.
So great question. Thank you for bringing that up. Is there anybody else to question or comment? I must say, if not, I'll just say that when I read this, it all sounded great. When I looked at the picture, I said, "Oh my goodness, that looks really top heavy." But then when you look at the neighborhood, I think that it does fit. So that's at least the thought process that I went through when I went through this. When I asked the planning department why we have the ordinance about the dormer length, it's mostly an aesthetic rationale, I was told. So I guess it's always in the high eye of the beholder, but you'll be living in it, not looking at it. So any other comments? If not, why don't we go on to the proposed order? Anyone? No? Okay. So we'll read through the findings. These are specific size and appropriate location. Three-story exists in the neighborhood. That's been attested to. The proposed three-story structure will not adversely affect the neighborhood because dwelling future dormers on the front facade. Proposed three-story structure will not create a nuisance or serious hazard to vehicles or pedestrians. Access to the site over streets is appropriate. You know, I had one other question. I apologize. When I looked at the zoning memo, it does comment that is the rear setback changing? It says that the existing is 40.7 feet, and then it says that the proposed is 30.5 feet. The footprint is not changing, correct?
We are not.
Sorry, thank you.
We are not changing the footprint.
The footprint is staying the same.
Footprint staying.
So that might just be a miss.
Read that's a typo.
Should just be no change. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. All right, so moving on to the conditions. Pretty straightforward. All right. There's a motion to approve. All those in favor? All those in favor of approval? So 8-0. Thanks, Anna. All right. So now, so you are all set until the next step in the process, which is full council has to vote on this, okay? You need 16 votes there. All right? Good luck. I hope you make it out okay. All right. So next on our agenda here is item 421-18. This is a special permit regarding Kessler Woods. Kessler Woods LLC petition for special permit site plan approval to amend special permit number 102-06, parens 15, at Kessler Woods to allow off-site relocation of the inclusionary zoning units as well as 24 additional units at 219 Commonwealth Avenue, containing approximately 10,347 square feet of land in a district zone multi-residence 1 from the approved site at 200 Estate Drive, Ward 8. Now this was briefly opened and held at our last meeting to give the petitioner some time to address some concerns that were raised. I see that petitioner's attorney, Franklin Stearns, is here, so do you want to go ahead?
Thank you. Let me just check, Shauna, will I be able to change the slides with this?
Use the arrow.
I'll also add that we have been joined by the Director of Planning and Development, Barney Heath, as well as Councillor Cheryl Lappin from Ward 8. And who else? I already mentioned Rebecca. And Jeff Coffey, from a member of the committee from Ward 5. All right. Go ahead, Frank.
Just give me 1 minute to make sure I know how to use this, because it's not the first slide.
Just to give a little roadmap to the audience, we're going to spend about, I'm not sure how long your presentation is, Frank, about 10 or 15?
15.
15 minutes, and then? Okay. And then the planning department will make their comments, and then we'll entertain comments from the public, and then we'll have a discussion among ourselves.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening, members of the council, members of the committee. My name is Frank Stearns from the law firm of Holland & Knight. This proposal has as a primary objective to create 24 new income-restricted and rent-restricted apartments and households in the city of Newton, all of them in a newly renovated building with close access to public transportation. And with your support, we will be able to create 24 affordable households to have new homes in Newton in 2019. What we are really presenting you with is a choice. The choice, option one and option two, are spelled out on the slide. The first choice is to make no change to the Hancock Estate special permit. And option two is the choice is to amend the Hancock Estate special permit, which would allow the leveraging to create 24 new rent-restricted apartments at the historic Chestnut Hill. The outcome of that choice, if you choose to amend the special permit, would result in 9 affordable apartments remaining at Hancock Estates, units at 50%, 65%, and 80% of AMI, one-bedroom units and two-bedroom units dispersed throughout the building remaining at Hancock Estates as part of what was originally approved a number of years ago. But in addition to that, we would propose to move four units at or below 80% AMI to the historic Chestnut Hill. And in conjunction with that, we would produce another five voluntary inclusionary units ranging between 30% of AMI and 80% of AMI at the historic Chestnut Hill. And in addition to that, we would create 19 workforce housing units up to 120% of AMI at the historic Chestnut Hill. As a result of the choice of option two, 24 additional units would be eligible for the subsidized housing inventory. There is no question of the need for more and diverse types of affordable housing in Newton. The Hancock Estates Phase 1 lottery attracted over 600 households. Over 80 of those households applied for the local preference units to serve current Newton residents. The Hancock Estates lottery for the first nine affordable units has now been completed. If this proposal is approved, there will be an additional lottery at the Chestnut Hill to generate 28 additional new units. Chestnut Hill Realty and B'nai B'rith Housing are trying to expand both the number of affordable housing units in Newton and the diversity of housing choices in Newton. With this proposal, Hancock Estates will remain home to 10% affordable units. The Chestnut Hill, the historic Chestnut Hill, will provide a range of affordability from 30% AMI to 120% AMI, creating a very diverse tenant mix in that building. In combination, that will raise the combined inclusionary percentage to 20% in excess of the ordinance requirement. And if you then factor in the workforce housing units between the 80% and 120% tier, it would raise the total combined affordability to 32%. This is a picture of the building, the historic Chestnut Hill at 219 Commonwealth Avenue. The Chestnut Hill is a historic building built in 1899. It's presently being renovated to include 28 income and rent restricted units. It's presently a 28-unit building as well. It's not a change in density. It's not an expansion or enlargement of the building. It's simply a renovation and refurbishment of the existing building. As I said earlier, nine affordable units will remain at Hancock Estates. Four will move over to the historic Chestnut Hill. All the units at the Chestnut Hill will become income and rent restricted in perpetuity. In addition, we'll create a Type 2 accessible unit at the Chestnut Hill, and overall, we will create 37 rent restricted units. We believe this meets all of the city's affordable housing goals. It maintains a critical mass of both one-bedroom and two-bedroom units at Hancock Estates. It provides additional affordable housing opportunities at a transit-oriented site at Chestnut Hill, and it serves a wide range of income levels, 30 to 80% of AMI for the inclusionary units, up to 120% of AMI for the workforce housing units. And we believe it overcomes some of the barriers to creating new affordable housing, as noted last week with Newton's alignment with other suburban communities to spur affordable housing creation. The Chestnut Hill location is a different type of location from Hancock Estates. It's on the Green Line, it's transit-oriented, it's near employment, it's walking distance to Boston College, it's near neighborhood amenities, including playgrounds, churches, restaurants, shops. It's a very different choice, it's a different housing choice compared to the more remote Hancock Estates. As I said earlier, the renovation, which is underway, will make the housing at the historic Chestnut Hill housing that Newton can be proud of. All 28 units are being upgraded with new appliances and new finishes. The common areas are being refurbished. The exterior is being repaired. A new washer dryer is being added to the third floor to supplement the one on the ground level. A new accessible unit is being added and is being proposed at the 30% AMI tier. A building-wide fire sprinkler system is being added for the entire building. Weather-protected bike storage is being added. And the quality of the unit renovations at the Chestnut Hill will meet all market rate standards. We've been working with the planning department to improve on the pre-existing condition regarding parking. We've developed a transportation demand management plan. We're not proposing any physical improvements. We're not proposing any site plan changes, but we can take the pre-existing parking lot, which is an unstriped area behind the building. We can stripe it for 8 to 9 spaces. We've been in discussions with the planning department, and we can, in response to their comments, we can agree that the inclusionary zoning units will get priority for the on-site parking spaces. There's the ability to adapt a handicapped parking stall should one be needed. A zip car can be accommodated. Weather-protected bike storage is being built into the plan. And Chestnut Hill Realty has agreed to make a $136,800 subsidy for key passes to building residents. We see material benefits of this proposal. As I said before, 9 of the 13 affordable units from the special permit will remain at Hancock Estates. All of the inclusionary units at Hancock Estates and all of the units at the Chestnut Hill will remain income and rent restricted in perpetuity. The units that are being swapped match the level of affordability of the original units at Hancock Estates. And there are significant public benefits to the city of Newton. We've been working with the planning department in order to respond to their comments in their memorandum. One of their primary comments, they asked us if we could take the unit which was slated to be the accessible unit, which was slated to be a 50% AMI unit, and they asked us if we could make that a 30% AMI unit, and we were able to accommodate that. And we agreed to the other improvements that I just described. In addition to the planning department memorandum, as you all know, we did receive a letter at the date of the last meeting in September from the Livable Newton Coalition, which we felt needed a pretty thorough and substantive response. I'd like to respond briefly to that letter tonight. A detailed written response was provided to Livable Newton, and copies of that were provided to members of the committee in the package. The letter actually started out by questioning the purpose of proposing the swap. I just want to make it very clear. The primary objective of this proposal is to create more affordable housing in Newton. Chestnut Hill Realty and the neighboring housing have a history of creating affordable housing in Newton from the project they did together at 33 Commonwealth Avenue. An additional objective of the proposal is to create additional diversity to the city's affordable housing inventory. The historic Chestnut Hill offers a different choice of type of housing. It's more urban, it's more transit-oriented, and it's really quite different than Hancock Estates in its more rural setting. The letter questioned the layouts of some of the two-bedroom units at Hancock Estates. The unimix of one-bedroom and two-bedroom units was approved by the city as part of the special permit and as part of the inclusionary housing plan back in 2015. That unit mix was approved again in 2018 by the city and by the state DHCD. The fact that some of the two-bedroom units, again, is something that was raised in the letter, does not violate the inclusionary zoning ordinance and does not make those two-bedroom units into three-bedroom units. All the unit sizes and all the unit parity requirements in the inclusionary zoning ordinance have been met. The distribution of the inclusionary zoning units throughout the building at Hancock Estate also complies with the ordinance. To use the phrase in the ordinance, they are dispersed throughout the building, and they are in equally desirable locations of the building as required by the ordinance. Those specific locations for those units were approved by the planning department following review and input from the Newton Housing Partnership, and they were approved by the DHCD. The inclusionary units are on all floors of the building, in each wing of the building, and they face both the front and the woods at Hancock Estates. The timing of the marketing and occupancy of the units is also allowed by the project's inclusionary housing plan, its regulatory agreement with DHCD, and with the governing special permit. I think it's critical to note that the special permit for Hancock Estates, which most of you know as Kepler Woods, was written in 2006. It was written after a very, very extensive process that some of you participated in. It contained an extraordinary number of mitigation commitments associated with the construction of the Kepler Woods project. When Chestnut Hill Realty took over the project because the original developer was not able to do it, Chestnut Hill Realty was told very firmly, don't change the special permit. Yes, you can change the plan because you were proposing to build one building of rental apartments as opposed to three buildings of condominium units. But don't change anything in the special permit. And that special permit contained very heavily negotiated mitigation commitments, and that special permit contained the language that governs the where we are today, which is that the inclusionary zoning compliance is a precondition of the issuance of the final certificate of occupancy. So it's important to us to just state for the record that if the planning department and the city council, which it does, we know that if it writes its special permits very differently now in terms of when the regulatory agreement gets negotiated with the DHCD and when the marketing takes place, that reflects the current standard of practice, but this special permit was clear that this was an allowed way to proceed. The advertising of the inclusionary units was also fully reviewed and approved by the city and by the DHCD. In fact, as stated earlier, the lottery for the first 9 units is now completed. One of the comments related to the financial analysis of the proposal. The Neighborhood Housing commissioned an independent financial analysis of the proposal back in 2017. It demonstrates that a material, multi-million dollar voluntary private subsidy from Chestnut Hill Realty is making the proposal possible. We look forward to meeting with Livable Newton, discussing it, sharing the study, and discussing with them the financial underpinnings of the proposal in order to be responsive to their questions. A couple more items, and I'll wrap up. The letter questions having inclusionary zoning units off-site at all. The ordinance clearly allows both on-site and off-site compliance, which this proposal intends to do with both units at Hancock Estates and units at the historic Chestnut Hill. And regarding the comment about public funding, there is no public funding being relied upon for the 4 swap units. This keeps the proposal in compliance with the inclusionary zoning ordinance and with the mass housing workforce housing program. So from our perspective, this is a unique opportunity for the city. It's an unusual proposal, admittedly. It's not something that typically happens, but it's an opportunity to leverage the creation of more and different housing in addition to the housing to remain at Hancock Estates. We believe the site is appropriate for the use in terms of the historic Chestnut Hill at 219 Commonwealth Avenue. It's not, in fact, not a change in use of that building. That building for approximately 100 years has been a multifamily apartment building, so we're not changing the use. We don't believe that the use will adversely affect the neighborhood. We're not increasing the density of the utilization of the building. There will be no nuisance or hazard to vehicles or pedestrians. As I said, we're not changing the site plan. We're not changing the parking lot, but we will do some striping in order to make the parking lot a little bit more functional. As a final thought, though it may be easier to make no change and end up with 13 inclusionary units at Hancock Estates, we really believe that the proposal presents an unusual and unique opportunity to create 24 new rent-restricted apartments in Newton essentially right away, all of those in the newly renovated building. And with your support, we'll have 24 new housing units, 9 at Hancock Estates, and 24 at the Chestnut Hill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Terms. I think we'll have some questions for you after, but first we're going to hear from planning. And I think
we're going to also get a little bit of a timeline at some point when how this permit kind of at Hancock Estates came to pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Attorney Stearns noted, this is a special permit site plan approval to amend Council Order 102-0615 to locate 4 inclusionary zoning units from 200 Estate Drive to 219 Commonwealth Avenue. Council Order 102-06-15, which is the current Hancock Estates, formerly Tesla Woods Council Order, allows a 4-story, 88-unit multifamily building with 13 deed-restricted units. 6 of those units are deed-restricted to households earning 50% of AMI. 6 units are deed-restricted to households earning up to 80% of AMI, and 1 unit is deed-restricted to households earning up to 65% of AMI. This is the unit mix approved at Hancock Estates. As you can see, there's 13 inclusionary zoning units, 8 of which are 2-bedroom units and 5 are 1-bedroom units. You see the average square footage of the units at 893 for the 1-bedroom and 1,000 square feet for the 2-bedroom. The Newton Zoning Ordinance allows development or inclusionary zoning units in a development to be located off-site by special permit, provided an applicant enters into an agreement with a nonprofit housing development organization. The petitioner has entered into B'nai B'rith to pursue this proposal, satisfying the requirements. As Attorney Stearns noted, 219 Commonwealth Avenue is a legal, non-conforming, 3.5-story, 29 multifamily structure. It is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, which limits modifications. It's located approximately 1/2 mile from the Boston College stop on the MBTA's Green Line. And the petitioner is currently renovating the interior of the building, which will decrease the number of units by 1 from 29 to 28 units. This is an aerial to provide some brief context. To the top of the screen is Mount Alvernia. To the bottom and to the right of the screen is the BC campus. The lot is a corner lot with frontages on the carriage road of Commonwealth Avenue and Nanette Road. The petitioner sought a special permit to locate some inclusionary units off-site in 2017. Initially, the petitioner sought to locate all required 13 inclusionary zoning units to 219 Commonwealth Avenue. The petitioner revised the proposal twice before withdrawing. The first revision still sought to locate all 13 units at 219 Commonwealth Avenue, but included an additional 6 inclusionary housing units at 80% of AMI. The second revision maintains the 5 one-bedroom inclusionary units at Hancock Estates and proposed to locate 8 two-bedroom units at 219 Commonwealth Avenue. This option also included 4 additional inclusionary zoning units for a total of 12 at 219 Commonwealth Avenue. The current proposal, the petitioner proposes to locate 4 of the required 13 inclusionary units from Hancock Estates to 219 Commonwealth Avenue. An additional 5 units at or below 80% of AMI would be provided at 219 Commonwealth Avenue, and the remaining 19 units would be workforce housing units available to households earning up to 120% of AMI. The 9 affordable units at 219 Commonwealth Avenue will average at 65% of AMI, including 1 accessible unit which will be dedicated to households earning up to 30% of AMI. As 25% of the units in the development would be inclusionary units, all of the units, all 28, would be eligible for listing on the SHI. This is just a quick outline of the unit mix. You can see the 1-bedroom unit proposed at 30% of AMI is the accessible unit, and the majority of the units at 219 Commonwealth Avenue are 1-bedroom and 2-bedrooms at the 80 to 100% AMI level. This is a quick comparison of the affordable units from Hancock Estates to 219 Commonwealth Avenue. As you can see, the petition creates 2 studio units at Hancock Estates. Hancock Estates, on average, has larger unit sizes, but, of course, 219 Commonwealth Avenue provides more units. Regarding accessibility, staff believes that 219 Commonwealth Avenue is not comparable to Hancock Estates. Hancock Estates is an elevator building where all units are accessible and visible to those with disabilities. Two of the required inclusionary units at Hancock Estates are fully accessible to those with disabilities. One unit is fully accessible at 219 Commonwealth Avenue. None of the remaining units are adaptable or visitable. Hancock Estates also has accessible parking. Staff has asked for two stalls at 219 Commonwealth Avenue to be reserved in the case that should a need arise. The two stalls will be combined into one van accessible stall. As Attorney Stearns noted, the existing parking area at 219 Commonwealth Avenue is legally nonconforming and not striped. Staff asked the petitioner to stripe the area to include as many stalls as possible. The current plan provides 9 substandard spaces, one of which will have to be removed due to insufficient length. And on the following plan, the petitioner proposes stalls 8 and 9 to be adaptable to one van accessible stall should the need arise. So as you can see at the far right of the parking facility, stalls 8 and 9 are the stalls that are dedicated to be combined into one van accessible stall should the need arise. However, stall 7, which is immediately to the left of stalls 8 and 9, will have to be removed due to insufficient length, and also the bike rack will have to be removed. As Attorney Stearns noted, the petitioner has prepared a TDM plan. However, staff has some suggestions to dedicate all parking stalls to a lottery amongst the 9 inclusionary units, to make all units without a parking stall on site eligible for reimbursement up to $200 per month for transit passes for the first 3 years following lease-up. The petitioner has also proposes to appoint a TDM coordinator to work with the city. Planning suggests that the TDM coordinator conduct a survey on tenant parking and 6 months after full occupancy and annually thereafter. Also, the TDM coordinator shall share the findings of those surveys with the city. Also, to provide a snow storage facility on site or snow management plan for the parking facility and confirm the number of weather-protected bicycles, and also to explore installing a bike rack along the Commonwealth Avenue frontage. The current proposal represents trade-offs between the accessibility, parking, and amenities at Hancock Estates and the proximity to transit and the additional inclusionary units that could be provided at 219 Commonwealth Avenue. Planning staff believes the proposal presents a rare opportunity to locate 28 deed-restricted units near transit to households with a range of incomes while still retaining affordable, accessible units at Hancock Estates. That's the end of the presentation, Mr. Chairman. Several members of the planning staff are here to answer questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Cronin. Did other planning staff want to add anything at this time, or do you want to just be available to answer questions? Can't ask questions. Okay. All right. So who's here tonight from the public who wishes to speak? If you could just give me a show of hands. All right. Good. All right. So I'd like to invite up at least first anybody who's a representative of Liverpool Newton, if you're here tonight. Anybody here? Just because that was the letter that kind of was presented at the last, that triggered the petitioner's request for a little bit of delay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. We've been joined by President Emeritus Lyle Baker, also counselor from Ward 7. Yes.
I just had a quick question for the petitioner's counsel before he sat down. Is that appropriate, or do you want to wait?
I'd like to get the public first, if you don't
That's
mind.
Fine.
Do you have another meeting that you have to get to?
No,
I'm here. If you could just hold that for the moment.
Sure.
Yes, Councilor Crossley.
Just quickly, I would appreciate if the chart could go back on the screen. I don't have a question right now, but the chart that compares the two sets of units,
great,
square footages and so forth. Thank you.
Okay. If not a livable Newton person, then anybody who wants to come down. Why don't we start on the right-hand side of the chamber? Come on down then. As is our policy, we're going to try to limit comments generally to 2 minutes so that we can get all the comments that we can in the short amount of time that we generally have allotted.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
I'm sorry, I'm a guest here, but there was a great deal of concern last time that 2 minutes really didn't give people an adequate time to explore the issues they'd like to. My memory is that we traditionally had three, but I haven't been at the committee for a while.
Haven't.
So I apologize, but...
We'll start with two, and we'll see how we get.
All right.
Okay, there are a lot of people who want to speak, and we have a lot of business.
Okay.
We have a lot of items that come before us that people have a lot to say, and we do try to limit it to two per. So if there are a number of people who want to speak on this item, they can kind of go in series, and then we'll hear from both, all three of them. Okay, so I'll consider you guys three speakers.
Okay. We may have one more.
I think we have one.
Who's at the CPC meeting?
Okay. This is really just to try to keep things moving. So go ahead. Why don't you go ahead and start?
Reverend Haywood wanted to speak as well. Good evening. My name is Judy Jacobson. I live at 289 Cypress Street. I'm one of the signers of the Livable Newton letter. I don't think the developer, through his attorney, provided an adequate response, and I'm happy to answer any questions on specific issues. But I have some additional thoughts that I wanted to share. As you all know very well, we really need housing in Newton that serves people at all income levels. If you haven't looked at the marketing information online for the market rate apartments at Hancock Estates, you might not know that the super big units with so-called dens, none of which are inclusionary units, are renting for upwards of $8,000 a month. That's a lot of money, and not a rent that a regular, not super rich family can afford. It's important to remember that we, and by we, I mean the City of Newton through actions taken by the City Council, created the value for these $8,000 plus apartments. Some 15 plus years ago, we used CPA funds from Newton taxpayers to acquire the Kesslerwood site, and the Council granted a special permit to allow the development there today that does not meet underlying zoning requirements. State law requires a municipality to get something special, like affordable housing, in exchange for a special permit. So the inclusionary units at Hancock Estates are required by state and local law, and they're important. Including these units in a market rate development is one of the few ways that we can ensure that regular people can be part of that community, our community. I hate to fuel the false narrative put forward by some in our community regarding greedy developers. Most rational people know that you can't characterize an entire group of people in one way, but sometimes the label fits. As many of you know, I work in affordable housing. Over the years, I've seen many mixed income developments in communities across the state. In my experience, most developers, and I'm talking about for-profit developers, don't have affordable units that are half the size of the market units. Most developers don't cluster the affordable units in the least desirable locations in the building. Most developers don't rent up almost all the market units before they get around to holding a lottery for some of the units. And most developers don't engage in discriminatory advertising. And you know what? In other communities, when you have a developer acting as the Hancock Estates developer has, the municipality doesn't let them get away with it. I'm disappointed that we have a developer who has rode roughshod over our inclusionary zoning ordinance. And I'm even more disappointed that our city government has been asleep at the switch or compliant. I don't know which. Maybe some of both. In any event, it's deeply disturbing. We know from the basketball-sized, court-sized banner at the Chestnut Hill Mall that white people who sit around drinking champagne are the preferred occupants at Hancock Estates. The developers, and perhaps the planning department, may think they've pulled a fast one on the state DHCD, although I doubt it. I'm a former state housing official myself, and this is the kind of advertising that the state features in their fair housing training as to what developers cannot do if the municipality requires that the units count on the state-subsidized housing inventory, as Newton does. We need you, our elected officials, to enforce our zoning ordinance and stand tall for the principles of diversity and inclusion that are core values in our community. Please take a hard look at what happened here and exercise the remedies that the city has, and make sure that this never happens again. I ask that the city's legal department provide a full written report made available to the public in some reasonable time frame, analyzing the compliance of Hancock Estates with the Newton Zoning Ordinance, its special permit, the inclusionary housing plan, and the regulatory agreement. And the report should be clear about how the city is going to ensure full compliance in future developments going forward.
Could you wrap up?
Sorry, 30 more seconds. As for the swap at Hancock Estates, there should be no further accommodations for this developer. It's concerning that the planning department's memo didn't include any financial analysis of either project. No analysis was done to quantify the financial windfall for the developer if the swap is approved. There's a reason the Boston agency is called Planning and Development. I hope that the Hancock Estates fiasco will serve as a wake-up call to the council and the mayor. Unless and until our planning department has development expertise, we will continue to be outgunned by those developers who are motivated solely by profit. As to 219 Commonwealth Ave, once a housing resource in our community, relieving pressure from the D.C. students and now sitting empty, I very much hope that the city will encourage and support the redevelopment of this property as affordable, mixed-income housing. Thank you for your careful review of this matter and for the extra time.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobson. So I did go ahead and allow 5 minutes there. If we could keep the next couple speakers a little bit shorter. We did receive your submitted letter. We do receive further submissions from you, so you don't have to read the whole thing. If you just want to kind of make your points, that would be ideal. That's what we try to do.
I'll read off of anything.
Great.
My name is Jason Korb. I live at 21 Carver Road. I actually grew up in Newton. I went to Newton Public Schools, and I'm a for-profit developer. And I'm the one that did the financial analysis on the project. And it's on my phone right here. And if anybody would like to see it, I can email it to you. Someone called me up and said, Jason, I want you to take a look at this. So I'm a for-profit developer. I do market rate housing, and I build affordable housing. I worked at Beacon Communities for many years, and I started up my own company in 2010. And so I did a back-of-the-envelope analysis. I have a pretty good sense of where rents are, because I do this every day. I have a pretty good sense of operating costs, because I do this every day. And I calculated that the developer will be getting about a $1.8 million profit on this project by doing this. I don't know if anybody's ever asked them why they want to do this. And the reason is because the rents at 219 Commonwealth Avenue are so much lower than the rents at Hancock Estates. So that's one of the significant points. The other is that the quality of 219 Comm Ave, the asset quality, demands what's called a higher cap rate. You actually need a higher rate of return because it's a Class B, B plus asset, whereas Hancock Estates is a Class A, A plus asset. So not only are they getting like a $1.8 million profit by shifting the units over, what do you think happens when they take a development that has 88 units with 13 affordable units and make it an 88 unit development with 9 affordable units? Right? You're reducing the number of affordable units significantly. What do you think happens to the value of Hancock Estates? So it's not just the money that they're realizing by shifting the 9 units over. It's also the fact that the value of Hancock Estates itself goes up as well. It actually, for those of you in finance and understand cap rates, the cap rate on Hancock Estates goes down. So if that doesn't make sense, you guys can reach out to me. I know a number of you have my contact info, and I'm happy to email my financial analysis around. I feel pretty good about it.
Why don't you email it to the clerk, if you don't mind.
Sure. That'd be great. Yeah, maybe I'll ask them for their email. So.
Great.
Happy to put it up and explain it to everybody too. So.
I think you did a good job.
Thanks.
Thank you. Reverend Hayward?
My name is Howard Hayward. I live at 69 Walker Street in Newtonville. You know, I will be brief, and I'm going to be succinct too. Walking into Chestnut Hill Mall and seeing a banner as big as a basketball field inviting people to live at this new facility called Hancock Village with two white people drinking champagne has for me was disgusting, was insulting, and it implied that that's who was going to be welcomed there and invited there. Beyond that, it implies that the only people that could afford to live in these apartments would not look like me. And if people who look like me want to be included in this project, would have to go to 219 Commonwealth Avenue, where the prices are less, and implying that people own pieces of color could only afford to pay prices that are lower than the market value, which is another insult. If this was a neophyte developer that doesn't have experience in doing developing in this area, we might find some excuses, but that's not the case here. These are well-informed, experienced developers, and I believe intentionally put that sign up. And if you guys approve that sign, that advertising, shame on you. I have no doubt there's not one person on this board or on this entire city council that agrees with the implications of that sign. I do not believe that. I've lived here all my life and I don't believe that. But proof is in the pudding. This city, in order to increase their affordable housing stock, every development has gone through with kicking and fighting to avoid them happening. And for you now to turn around and change the rules, first of all, I believe that the 10% or the change in off-site housing should have been submitted in the initial proposal, and it wasn't. So, I'm sorry I get a little emotional about this, but this hurts. I'm telling you, this hurts. This hurts to me, and it hurts the members of my community that think that the city would try to put something over like this. St. Cross Village is okay for some people, but not for others. And that's what this ordinance, that's what this change does. Put, if rich people here, you can't mix them all together. Why? What's the purpose? And I'm, you know, maybe some people won't like what I'm saying tonight, but I'm going to say it, and it's the truth, and you know it.
If we could please refrain from applause, I appreciate it. We try to have our meetings in the absence of applause or other expressions of approval or disapproval, just to make sure that all speakers feel comfortable giving their viewpoints. So I'm sure that you'd appreciate that if you were at the podium yourself. So please abide by my rules. Thank you. Ms. Weisberg.
Thank you. Lynn Weisberg, 5 Alden Street. I will be very brief because nothing more should have to be said once you heard what Judy Jacobson and Reverend Haywood said. Between their testimony and what was in the letter that Livable Newton sent to land use, that should be enough to tell each of you that this is not a swap, that the two choices that the developer put up, that the choice should be to hold them to the original terms of the special permit. This is many years later. This is a significant change in the project, and it should not be allowed after the fact.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, so from the right-hand side of the room, are we done? Anybody else? All right. Come on down, sir. Please state your name again. And
good evening. Kevin Kane, representing the trustees of the condominium at 209 Commonwealth, which is directly to the right of 219. I don't want to repeat many of the things that were already said, but on the financial end of things, I did an analysis as well. My range was quite a bit broader, but it was at a minimum of 1.5 to 2.5 million. This is all about money. It's really that simple. With respect to the legal issues, however, as I read the zoning ordinance 5.11.6c, to the extent that off-site inclusionary units are to be provided allowed, they have to be completed no later than the completion of the applicant's market rate unit. As far as I know, those are already built. With respect to 5.11.7c, it essentially says the materials used, quality construction, etc., have to be essentially identical. And I went online today to take a look at what Hancock Estates has to offer, and I guess I'll hand this in perhaps as an exhibit. But at Hancock Estates,
You get, amongst other things, concierge service, package acceptance, dry cleaning kiosk, an activity room, community lounge, entertainment suite, cafe, home office center, conference rooms, etc. You also get quite a bit of outdoor area, which is important for kids and families, including a grilling area, fire pit, putting green, playground. And if you're a pet owner, you get a fenced-in dog run, a pet grooming station, and many other amenities that simply are not at 219. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next, from the left-hand side of the room, come on down. And you should be feel free. And others, if they're going to be speaking, just go ahead and line up a little bit. You can have two or three people waiting if that's all right. Go ahead.
Dale Silverstein, 55 Woodlawn Drive. I just want to address the criterion for the special permit that Councillor had explained, that 219 is a site appropriate for the use, that the use does not adversely affect the neighborhood, and no nuisance or hazard to vehicles or pedestrians. And I believe I did speak at the last meeting about the issue that the developer may not be aware of, but this particular neighborhood, this particular corner, has a lot of traffic issues, a lot of parking issues. It's going to be a change from a student population to a family working population. And in fact, letters were sent to the neighbors asking us, I received one, if we would be willing to rent either our garage or our driveway space to potential new tenants. Meaning, despite the $200 pass and whatever, eight spots, they're looking for more parking. They know that there's not enough, so they're asking neighbors if they'd be willing to rent. It's a very densely used area. The bus stop is on for Newton North, and the middle school is on the carriage road right at the corner of Manet and Com Ave. We have the Mount Alvernia drop-off and pick-up that makes Manet Road very, very tight. It is very dangerous for pedestrians. The entire neighborhood suffers from the number of cars. Drivers use the entire neighborhood as a parking lot. This is only going to increase with the change of the population in the building. So I know there's a traffic manager person that the councilor has described. I think that person needs to look long and hard, and you guys need to look long and hard on the parking and traffic changes that this change will encompass.
Great, thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is Elizabeth Benedict. I'm a resident at 137 Commonwealth, and I also own the building at 242 Commonwealth Avenue across the street. As you all recall, we had a long battle with special permits and parking issues at 242 Com Ave. When I took ownership of the building, we completely abided by everything that this council laid out. We gave up a lot of parking. We switched our business hours. We did landscape projects for the neighborhood to make it a safer neighborhood environment. Having four kids going to Ward School, I have a 17-year-old down to a 10-year-old. When my 17-year-old graduated fifth grade, there were 38 kids in the class. Now I have a 10-year-old in fifth grade with 58 kids in the class, I believe, maybe more. Most of this is due to the multi-housing that went up at 33 Com Ave. I also get all of the traffic for Mount Alvernia pickup on 137. They line up in front of my house. We love the student population that's at 219. They rescue my dog when it runs away. They don't bother my parking on the carriage lane or my business parking across the street. This new multifunctional housing is crazy. It's going to congest the neighborhood. It's also going to make an impact on my business across the street where we park. My parking lot went from 6 or 7 down to 4. And so, I think it's just completely an overload on the whole neighborhood. The schools, the businesses, the parking. We also did get the same letter in the mail asking if we'd rent the business parking lot or my personal parking for this unit or for this project.
Okay, thank you very much. Come on over. You can please come over as well.
Hello, my name is Ernie Furweis, and I live at 4 Garrison Street at the corner of Ward and Garrison. Some of my prepared comments are overlapping what other people have said, but I'll try to not duplicate that. I think it's very important to stop this maneuver by Chestnut Hill Realty and Hancock Estates to turn 219 Comm Ave into basically low-income affordable housing only. And Hancock Estates and Chestnut Hill Realty should follow the present permit law to establish living complexes as mixed communities with no income, low income, affordable and moderate income, and high income residents living together, not segregating low income and affordable income residents off by themselves in project like complexes. 33 Comm Ave, I guess it's 33, not 55, just a few blocks down the street, at least is a good example of mixed income living with low income residents and moderate and high income living together as neighbors with common values and community loyalty. There should be diversity in both locations, 219 and Kessler Woods, not low income and affordable income residents all in one building. Separating affordable housing to an entire building away from Kessler Woods reduces incentive, in my opinion, for maintenance. Trash maintenance at 219 has been poor in the past, as has snow removal. It seems that inclusionary affordable units planned for 219 Comm Ave are going to be smaller than those at Kessler Woods. Why shouldn't people living in affordable units also have the benefit of some of the larger living spaces? Why should inclusionary units not have access to all the amenities that were mentioned at Kessler Woods? They'd have to build a theater, exercise room, a business fit center at 219 Comm Ave if they're going to claim that low-income, affordable residents will have as good a quality of life as they would in Kessler Woods. If all or some of the 8 two-bedroom apartments at Kessler Woods are moved over to 219 Comm Ave, my understanding is that there's going to be a net loss of 8 accessible apartments, according to ADA, or our ADA coordinator. Other than one small accessible apartment on the first floor of 219, there are no accessible apartments in the building.
You could wrap up, sir. Go ahead.
Last, I want to mention that there are many developers and realtors who work and live in Newton who are trustworthy and honorable, are Hancock Estates and Chestnut Hill Realty. If my wife was walking by 219 Comm Ave, the required lawn sign announcing a public hearing on the property were hidden in the bushes in front of a house invisible to the public. She took the signs from behind the bushes and placed them strategically in front, one facing Ward Street and one facing Comm Ave. I don't think one of the neighbors hid those signs.
Okay.
Now one of the signs has been removed, so there is only one sign facing Comm Ave. I think this shows a very lack of good faith here.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much. Next.
Yes, you are not the first time, and I'll give a lot of credit to the builder, and he doesn't take no for an answer. Okay, it was so many people here, and so many people on the board would exactly know what he is doing. And it's not possible to have 29 units and 8 parking spaces. And it's what he's talking about. How does people are going to live in a building which has to be worse than the Kesselwood? Why? What is the reason for that? It was built to make people live comfortable. I'm not talking about the neighbors. I'm not talking about nothing. I'm just talking, it's no parking space for these people. Then go and ask neighbors to rent the spaces. It's not a solution. If they did not find the solution by now, you have to refuse it. And just say, no, you could not do that. And not waste everybody's time.
Thank you, ma'am. Can I just get a show of hands of more folks that are planning to speak? 1, 2, 3. Great. Okay. Come on down. And then we'll certainly have some additional questions from the counselors. Go ahead.
So my name is Jennifer Walkowiak. I live at 3 Garrison, and I've lived in mixed housing. I lived in Washington, D.C. during my pediatric fellowship, which was required before licensure in my field. I had just finished 4 years of college and 6 years of graduate work and residency, and I was making $28,000 before taxes at a children's hospital, working 70-plus hours a week, making moonlighting impossible. But I wanted to live in a safe neighborhood in D.C., so I pursued mixed housing. It really works. Folks take care of each other. They build a community. I worry about this unit for low-income housing. This unit already has upkeep issues. I have lived under this property group previously. Their track record for maintenance is not positive, from my observations nor online reviews. Would low-income to no-income residents be able to independently address the issues that I dealt with in this unit? Additionally, I now predominantly work with low-income families. If anyone tells you that people with no income, low income, or those with affordable housing have no cars, that is not true. Car ownership is important to the working poor. Car ownership are essential for quality of life. Garrison Street and Ward Street have restricted parking for years that became a necessity when C-19 were using the streets as a parking lot. I have no idea where these cars park in the winter, where fortunately night street parking is illegal. Inadequate parking spaces at C-19 will exacerbate the parking problem around the building, especially in winter when no overnight parking is available, and when Mount Alvernia Elementary students arrive in the morning and are released in the afternoon. This is a serious problem. I'm sorry that Hancock Developers and Chestnut Hill Realty purchased 219 as an estate for their accessible, affordable housing permit, but they're lucky they can still rent 29 apartments in the building that has 9 parking units. The important thing is middle and high-income tenants have a chance at parking. Low-income residents need to be able to commute to work as well as access affordable shopping and medical care. National studies have shown that low and reduced income residents are able to find more jobs and increase revenue if they have access to a car. Thank you
very much. Next, come on down, sir.
Hi, I'm David Edelman from 209 Com Ave. There's one subject that we're really not addressing properly is the special needs parking accessibility unit, because the parking, as you know, is in the back. The space between 219 and 209 is a right-of-way. So whoever parks in the back, which really reduces the parking to 6 spaces rather from 8/9, you got to go all the way around from Manage Road to come to the front of the building. Handicapped people, visitors, how can they make it? Go all the way around to get to the front of the building and enter the building from the front. This is doesn't even come close to what one building offers versus the other. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for bringing that up. And there's I believe one more speaker in the back. Come on down.
Good evening. My name is Marita Kressler. I live on Manette Road, and I've been there for 30 years. Chestnut Hill Realty wants to swap, as we all know, the location of 4 inclusionary units that were part of the permitted building of the Hancock Estate to 219 Comet. Mr. Stearns, representing Chestnut Hill Realty, in his letter to Livable Newton Coalition dated October 5th, states, diversity in both neighborhoods is enhanced. I see it differently. Reduction in the number of affordable units at the Hancock Estate does not enhance diversity at Hancock Estate. However, it may enhance the profits of Chestnut Hill Realty. Mr. Stern also states that if this proposal is not approved, the remaining 4 inclusionary units at Hancock Estate will be leased there. This proposal then goes on to historic Chestnut Hill apartments at 219 Commonwealth Avenue. In Mr. Stern's same letter, he states, the proposal allows many more of those qualified households and also additional households in the workforce housing tier, including Newton residents, to be able to secure permanently deed-restricted housing by virtue of the creation of 28 income and rent restricted units at the historic Chester Hill apartments. Permanently deed restricted housing under the Mass Workforce Housing Initiative is restricted for 30 years. So whether it is a mix of 4 and 24 units or 9 and 19 units,
The impact of this proposal is that at 219 ComEv, it will have a total of 28 apartments that will be 100% subsidized housing that will be deed restricted. This proposed 100% density of low-income, deed-restricted housing defeats the idea of diversity, inclusionary zoning, and mixed housing. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for your comments and your insights and your input. Let's open it up. I know that Councillor Baker had a question for the petitioner's attorney.
It may have been, I'm sorry, I came in just a little late for the presentation, but I really want to be clear. This is a request to amend the special permit for the original project, the Kessler Woods project. If that permit amendment is denied, then the original project goes forward as originally proposed. That's correct?
Correct.
I just want to be clear that as I understand it, this is being asked for as an amendment because of the variety of reasons they've discussed about what they want to do with the additional property. But if the City Council does not find it in the public interest or that the criteria are not met, we don't have to grant the permit. And then the project at Cornerstone will go forward as originally proposed. That's
the project at Hancock State.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to be clear about that.
And just to also just clarify, based on that comment, the renovations at 219 Commonwealth Avenue that are already ongoing are being done by right. So it's only with the swap that this is requesting in the amendment to the Kessler Woods permit that 219 even comes under our purview. Okay, just so people in the public also know that. Okay, so thank you for that. Others, I think that I saw a number of hands originally. Councillor Crossley.
Okay, I didn't think I was next, but I am not persuaded. I did not vote for the swap that was proposed a year ago, and I will not vote to approve the swap that's being proposed now. I can't pretend to understand a financial analysis that I haven't seen. I may need to be walked through it in any case. But the basic takeaway from this is we have units at Kessler Woods that are twice the size and half or something, some fraction lower of the value of what's going to be provided at Commonwealth Avenue. I think the financial analysis is extremely important because the metrics the petitioner is trying to sell to us is that we're getting an even deal here, if not a good deal, because there's so many more units of housing being provided. I don't even know what the word is. I am so discouraged. Speechless. I'm not speechless. I'm going to find the words. I'm speechless for a second. We are a community who frequently and deeply profess that we care about diversity and inclusion. In my faith, we talk about the inherent worth and dignity of all people. And I don't know how this advertising got approved, but I am too extremely disappointed that happened. I'm disappointed in all of us for not taking a closer look at the distribution of units that were allowed under the revised special permit in 2015. I want to say one more thing. There's plenty to reason to vote against this proposal. But I want to say something to the folks who said a few things that I don't agree with. I think there's a terrible misunderstanding among some about what the 100% affordable housing moniker means. And there's also somewhat of a misrepresentation
which would explain that by the petitioner about the workforce housing concept. I believe that workforce housing is important, and I believe that our community needs to, and we are working on figuring out ways to offer housing affordable to a wide spectrum of people. But 120% rental rates at Hancock Estates might be the same as what the market rates would bear. When you make 120% of median income, that's a huge jump up from an average of 65% median income. And the inclusionary housing ordinance restricts the income for the inclusionary units, which must be 15% of the units being built by our ordinance, to an average of 65% median income. So actually, I just want to be clear, what's being proposed at Hancock Estates is in fact an economically diverse housing mix. Okay. However, I just wanted to clarify that for folks, as I'm disturbed by some of the comments that came out of that misunderstanding. One more thing. I hope we don't even need to get this far, but the idea, I think I read somewhere, there's about $3 million being invested in the Commonwealth Avenue building. To me, they are topical investments. That's interior renovations and cosmetics and appliances and new kitchens and a lot of jazz. But they're not, as far as I could tell from any materials that were submitted to us, investing in the building. I don't see anything about new roofs or insulation or new windows or repointing or, you know, really helping to prolong the life and durability and so forth of the building. Even if they did that, without an elevator, without all the amenities that were listed many times over, I don't think this is a good deal for the city.
Okay. And I'll take your last comment as not being kind of a design concern, but more in a parallel comparability concern.
It's an additional comparability concern.
Okay. Great. Others? I know that we've been joined by a number of councillors from the area. Councillor Grossman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Councillor Crossley pretty much summed up virtually every thought that I have about this, so I don't want to be repetitive. I'm not a voting member of the committee, which I want to make sure the members of the public understand, but I am a councillor at large from Ward 7. I'm certainly not, I just want to be clear that on kind of surface level, when you first look at something that is sort of billed as creating a meaningful number of affordable and workforce units in the city, and especially in Ward 7, which I think has a lot to offer, that is something that, as a general principle, I really support and care about and want to see. But as I've dug in more and more to the specifics here, the history of this project, and what I see as the underlying drivers of what brought us to this. This doesn't seem right, feel right, and I'm just very compelled by the comparisons between the quality of life that's being offered in Hancock Estates and what this developer agreed to versus what they're asking to do today. And I think we have heard clearly from members of the public on many of these points as well. So, again, I don't want to be repetitive, but I did just want to convey my intent to the committee that I do not support this, and when it comes before the full council, I will not be voting for it. Thank you.
Great. Okay, thank you, Councilor Preston. Councilor Laredo, President Laredo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to try to be brief.
Thank you.
I tried. Can't promise you.
It's the only time I can give the president a little bit of facts.
Generally we're required, if we're going to oppose a petition, to state our reasons for doing so. And it's our custom, as president of the council, I typically do not say much during our debate on the floor. I just want to take a moment to express my reasons. why I will not be supporting this. I did not support this petition when it was presented to us last time, and nothing, as far as I'm concerned, has changed. I think the folks who live on Newton have articulated numerous issues with this. We've heard from members of the public. I think Councillor Crossing and Grossman have certainly stated reasons why this project is not comparable. I just don't see it as comparable. We had a project that was the product of a tremendous amount of work, particularly by my Ward 8 colleague, Councillor Lappin. It was discussed intensively. Everything was known here when this was put together, and you know, we're just not, I expect that that project gets built as promised, and this is just not close to an adequate substitute. Thank you.
Great, thank you, President Loretto. I know that everybody wants to get in on this, so let me just remind you, we have another item before us later this evening, and I would like to get to closure on this tonight, because I think that we've heard a lot of the issues, so that will take a little bit more time. So I just want to make sure that everybody wants to say, just keep that in mind. You're welcome to speak. Councillor Kelly's next. And I think that actually the planning department wanted to just comment on the ads. Do you want to make a comment about that?
Yeah, we...
This is Barney. He's the head of the department. And then we'll get to you.
I just want to address the issue of the advertising, because it's been raised a couple of times tonight. We don't approve the advertising for the market rate units. That's not part of our purview. We approve, and DHCD is intimately involved in the marketing of the affordable units. So I can appreciate a lot of what the speakers have been saying about the ads and the portrayals, but that's not something that's in our purview, and I just wanted to make that clear to everybody. So,
okay.
We can go into further detail if necessary.
Thank you, Mr. Heath. Go ahead, Councilor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm glad to hear that the city, through the planning department, wasn't responsible for the ads. And even though that's just for the market rate units, one wouldn't know that. It's for all the units. It gives the impression of the place as a whole, and I can feel and understand and agree with everyone who finds it highly objectionable. I'm quickly, because all the good points were made, going to state why I will not be voting in favor of this. Basically, the swap is inequitable, and it's at a disservice to both of the projects. There is not adequate accessibility at ComAv. There's not a choice for people of living, whether it's a more rural or a more urban environment, as Attorney Stearns pointed out. The quality, the unit size, and the AMIs are not compatible, and I will be voting clearly against this proposal.
Okay, thank you. I think I saw Councilor Markowitz.
I'll be super brief. I also am not going to support this. One of the things that, in addition to what Councilor Rayo said about honoring the original deal, when I looked at this sheet here, which had the market rents on it for 219 ComAv, I just found the proposed rents and what the value proposition would be to people who might be able to even get 219. It's not really being that good of a deal. Like, it's not even on the surface a good number. These small apartments renting for $3,500 a month, I know they're on ComAv across from D.C., but I think that's, 20-30% above what market is in that neighborhood for that type of thing. So that alone kind of tore it for me, so I won't be supporting it either.
Okay. Now I know Councilor Lappin had some things she wanted to say. I know you didn't raise your hand, though, so are you ready?
No, I was letting everybody else speak, but thank you very much. I feel like I know more about this project than I wanted to, or I'm not going to go back to 2003 when we bought the land and the whole deal and the cooperative bidding agreement. I will not discuss all the developers we met from 2004 to 2013 who wanted to do this project, and the reason that
we didn't go with them was because the affordable housing component was such an important part of the CPC approval. And so when we finally found a developer to do this who would keep the affordable in there, which was key, which was the reason we didn't go out with the other developers, I was thrilled. And I stood up here before everybody and said, this is a great deal. They're going to keep the affordable, and we should do it. And then they came back a year later and asked for 8 more units. Do you remember that? It was an amendment to that permit. They asked for 8 additional units, same footprint, 8 additional units. And the reason this board approved it was because of the extra affordable unit. There was a liaison group that was convened in 2015 during the construction, where there was blasting and there were lots of issues. And I was at 99% of those meetings. And every month, I would say, it's really important to get your affordable housing paperwork in because we want them, you know, it's supposed to be marketed at the same time. Another thing I said at those meetings was there's a pedestrian activated light that is required because you're now putting people in there and making the children walk across the street to get the bus. And you really got to get that going because it should be in before people start living there. And every month, Margaret, who was sitting right here, shook her head and said, I'll tell everybody, and I would ask for updates, and, oh, we're getting the affordable paperwork in. The affordable paperwork didn't come in, and in June of 2017, they had a request to remove all 13 units. And our planning department wrote a wonderful memo of all the reasons that that was not a good idea. And since then, our planning department has changed their minds. In October 2017, they withdrew their request to take out 13 units because nobody on the council would entertain that. Our planning department realized, our new planning housing person realized that there were some issues with this, and we hadn't received our paperwork. In September of 2017, Chestnut Hill Realty started leasing the market rate units. Our planning department realized that they hadn't gotten their paperwork in, and they also tried to get them to do that.
Councilor Lappin, can you turn on your...
What'd you say?
Can you turn back on your...
Oh, it is on. Is it not working?
It's working. Try again.
Is it on now?
I guess they're cutting us off.
They're cutting us off. How's that? Is that better?
Can't hear you, but that's okay. Speak up. We'll do it in the acoustics. They're not working. Go ahead. Now they're working. Go ahead. Technical difficulties. You can use it again. Sure.
Okay, back?
You're back.
Okay. Terrific. So, throughout this time, there were several issues. We gave them a temporary CO that expired in December of 2017. Now, they had leased 33 market rate units, and that was our moment. That was our leverage. We could have issued them a temporary CO again, but just to include those 33 units. And I spoke to the mayor, and I let her know that this was an opportunity to have some leverage. And I was hoping that would be enough to get them to give us the paperwork. Instead, they were given a temporary CO for all but 26 units, all but 13 affordable
and all but 13 market rate. So there's really no incentive for them to rush and do anything. So they finally got their paperwork in March of 2018, after the market rate units has not only been marketed, but people have been living there for several months. And then the city decided to give them a temporary CO for all but 8 units. Now, why 8 units? Well, because when the city signed the paperwork to the state for the affordable units, the city decided that instead of signing it for the 13 units that were required, but they did it in 2 separate lotteries. So all they had to do is a lottery for 9 units. The other 4 units will be a separate lottery. So the city was enabling the developer by splitting this out, hoping that they would be able to take 4 units out, which I have a problem with, in case you can't tell. During this time, the pedestrian activated light that was required, it's number 13 of the board order. It says pedestrian activated light, rapid flashing beacon. The developer went to traffic council for just one of those regular flashing lights that just shows people that, okay, here's your entrance, and nobody pays attention to it. There was a problem with the patent for the rapid flashing beacon, so traffic council passed it. I appealed this to the Public Safety Committee. The Public Safety Committee said, you're putting families in this building. It's a requirement of the special permit. Children are living there, walking across the street, a street, by the way, which has 13,000 cars a day going down it. And no, you can't do that. So they required them to do what they were supposed to do in the first place and before anybody lived there. So that again has been drawn out, and now hopefully they have ordered the light because there's a 4-month lead time to get a mask on. So this required pedestrian activated light for children will not be in until probably January or February, if we're lucky, which is over a year after they're living there. Today, where are we today? Well, first of all, look at this picture. Here's the picture that several citizens have mentioned. Okay, it's hard to see here, but this is the Chestnut Hill Mall, and there are the 2 white entitled people drinking wine. This has been the same advertising you see in the tab. It's the same advertising that you've been getting in cards in the mail. And they're marketing this to empty nesters. Now, I had no idea. I've been following up on the affordable housing. There's an intersection they were supposed to do up to a certain amount of money. They spent all their money on design. Okay, I know I'm going over, but I feel like there's too much.
I'm allowing it because I do know that you want to say a lot. So
all right.
Please.
Okay, I'm gonna this. Okay, so well, I've been following up on all these details. What I didn't know I needed to follow up on, which I was hoping our planning department would follow up on, but maybe they didn't know either because we haven't had inclusionary zoning units in a while. But DHCD has requirements, and they have specific requirements for marketing and advertising. And the requirements, and I can cite it, but in their rules, they say the advertising, which applies to all units, not just the affordable units, the market rate units also, shall be must consist of actions provided. Okay, so it has to be representative of all people, and it specifies people of color, minority, disabilities, and the advertising is supposed to represent all those people. And it's supposed to be approved by DHCD before any of the projects is marketed. So that is, first of all, very interesting to me because I'm not a housing person and I didn't know that. However, Chestnut Hill Realty has properties in Norwood, Cambridge, Brookline, Plainville, Canton, Chestnut Hill, West Roxbury, and Rhode Island, but forget Rhode Island. But all those places are in Massachusetts, and all of those, they know what is required. When the special permit in 2015, the first Chestnut Hill Realty permit came in, there was something that was missing from the previous special permit, and that was the requirement to have the affordable units marketed at the same time as the market rate units. However, our ordinances say that they not only have to be marketed at the same time, but through certain periods, 15% of whatever they have, whatever market rate people are living in. So if there are 20 units that they've leased, 15% of those have to be affordable. So it is apparent to me, and I'm not a lawyer, but I would really appreciate something in writing from the law department to let us know. But to me, this looks like they are currently in violation of state rules and our ordinances. Because when we do a special permit, if we want to do something different than our ordinances, we put in a waiver for parking, or we put in a waiver. There is no waiver in here. So they are still subject to our ordinances. So to me, they're in violation of both things. Somebody brought up
Did you want to get an answer from legal on that? Or
I don't think legal has an answer right now. I spoke to legal earlier. But those are two issues we have. If we're even going to look at 219 versus these four units, there is no comparison. Does everybody know what visitable is? It's a term that I've learned recently. You know what affordable is and accessible, but visitable means if a disabled person is living somewhere, if they can visit their friend on the second floor, the place is visitable. 219 has one or maybe now two accessible units. One accessible unit, and none of them are visitable. So if that person has a friend anywhere in the building, they can't go there. This is, and if we're getting back to money, which I know we can't consider this at all, but I think this goes to the council just said that they're doing this to create affordable housing. Now, first of all, 219 was naturally affordable. There were people living in there at very low rents who have been evicted. So it was affordable. They're not creating affordable. They're displacing people and making it affordable. So when we're talking about money, the council said that they're doing it to create affordable housing. And then we heard how much money people are.
You mean council with an S, just so people understand.
Council.
We're not talking about the council. You're talking
councilor
about
for the
lawyer. The lawyer, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you heard the back of the envelope of how much they think the developer's making. Well, the developer told me that the reason for the switch was so he could get more money to his grandchildren quicker. So that should solve everything, and that's really disturbing. So I have several other issues, but I will let other people speak. Today we have 62 market rate units, no affordables, no public safety, and a developer that is probably in violation at the state and city level. I don't think we should give them any more accommodations than we already have. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Lapton. Councilor Greenberg, and then I think we're going to try to take a little bit of a straw vote on this, and then we'll decide if we're going to be working on an approval or denial kind of board order, and then we'll probably hold the item to the next meeting. So go ahead, Councilor Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank Councilor Lapton for her close, detailed analysis of the projects, especially for the new folks on the council. I really appreciate it. The petitioner stated that the primary goal of this request for special permit was to provide the city with more affordable housing. I hope and would like to see that if that is true, that if this is denied, that the petitioner will again continue to offer to provide more affordable housing at 219 Conn Ave. I hope he will follow through with that goal. Also, my primary concern was the accessibility issue in comparison with Hancock Estates. I know we have our ADA coordinator here, Mrs. Fairley, and I'd like her to say a word about how difficult it is for someone to find an accessible apartment, whether affordable or not, in Newton.
Thanks, Councilor Greenberg. Can you hear me? Thank you. Usually I get asked this quite often about where can I find accessible housing in Newton, and I say look at new construction. That's about the only place you're going to find accessible housing. You know, we are a city of 70% private homes. Most of those homes have at least one step in. Just think about it. And so apartments and condos, if they're new construction, they don't have steps in. Or they have a really very easy walkway. And I am, you saw the comparison for accessibility for these two projects. There's quite inequity. It is true there's only one accessible apartment on the ground floor, along with the boiler, furnace room, and the laundry room. And there's no visibility. The parking lot, actually, someone did mention how far away it is. It is quite far away, but it's also up a big steep hill or a big flight of stairs. So it's so hard, actually, and there's nothing against the developer. It is very hard to make old buildings accessible in any way. So the ability to have some more accessible, affordable housing in Newton is really based on new construction for the most part. And that's what Hancock is for many people. I also know that there's people looking for accessible, affordable housing that were in the lottery for Hancock. Some people that I've been working with, and this would be terrific if there would be more staying there at Hancock for the four two bedrooms. Thanks very much.
Thank you, ADA Coordinator Farley. Was there anything that Ms. Berman, Director of Housing and Community Development, wanted to comment on? If so, please go ahead.
I'm not sure if we can get into the minute details of DHCD and their approvals. They've been intimately involved in this. I think the way that this played out has changed quite a bit in terms of how we treat projects. This happened to be a project that was kind of inherited a little bit and wasn't as specific in terms of the conditions that we now follow with respect to inclusionary zoning. DHCD is fully on board with all of the marketing plan for the affordable units and the lottery and the unit size and everything that's contained in the regulatory agreement. They've signed off on that. So just to be clear on that side of things, DHC is fine with the way that the affordable units have been marketed, the lottery's been held, all of the requirements that they look at.
Councilor Baker had his hand up, and then we'll go back to Councilor Lapton. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you jumped in there. I asked her first. Go ahead.
I just wanted to reiterate what Barney just mentioned about DHCD and the work that they did with us over the beginning of 2018 and with the developer. I spoke with DHCD again this morning, and they reiterated that the regulatory agreement, the last stop, is with DHCD. This regulatory agreement wouldn't have been signed if it wasn't fully vetted and approved by DHCD. The other thing that I wanted to mention, a point that was brought up, that 120% AMI rent is pretty much equal to market rate in Newton. It is not. There is about over, I want to say, $2,000 difference between some market rents for a two-bedroom and the 120% AMI cap that we would see for a workforce housing unit through the Mass Housing Workforce Program. Someone mentioned that that the planning department last year didn't support the moving of the units, and I just want to clarify that that was when the petitioner was asking for all 13 units to be moved, or even, I believe, then it was asking for 5 of them to stay and 8 to move. Since then, this new proposal is for 9 units to stay and 4 to move, and so there was a difference, and we did reassess each way along the process. And just again to reiterate what Barney mentioned, the review and approval of the marketing plan and campaign for the market rate units was not something that DHCD reviewed and approved. And again, in speaking with DHCD this morning to discuss this matter, they reiterated that that is not within their purview to approve the market rate units marketing campaign.
Thank you, Ms. Perman. So, Councilor Baker, and then Councilor Lappin, briefly.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My memory is that when this was discussed briefly a couple of weeks ago, there was a request made to clarify whether, in fact, the developer had complied with the terms of the original special permit. I've heard about DHCD and so forth, but it wasn't clear to me whether there had been any clarification of whether the original special permit had been complied with independently of the proposed amendment. I think that's a material fact that is important to understand. And also, I'm very sympathetic to the comments of my Ward 7 colleagues. I won't repeat them, but I would like to know about the compliance question.
Not the other ward, just the Ward 7. Solicitor Young, is there a judgment on whether they're... Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Tyra, Chief Planner.
Thank you. We have reviewed the project for compliance with the special permit, and the way the special permit is written is that they have to provide a certain number of affordable units and that they have to show compliance with the exclusionary zoning prior to issuance of a final certificate of occupancy, which they have not yet received. What we realized during the process was that the DHCD guidelines actually require review and approval earlier than the final certificate of occupancy. So once we realized that, we stopped everything. We held issuing certificates of occupancy until they submitted the necessary paperwork to DHCD and received approval and sign-off and recorded the regulatory agreement. Then we allowed them to start occupying additional units while holding 26, as that is what our ordinance states. If there's a request for off-site units, that you hold twice the number of units, we held twice the number of total affordable units at that time. We're still holding the 26 units, and we will start releasing one market rate unit for one affordable unit as they go forward and occupy the affordable units. The remaining 8 units that we're holding will depend on the outcome of this petition. But they are in compliance, as the requirements of the inclusionary zoning are to comply with the DHCD guidelines and be eligible for listing on the SHI, which they have complied. DHCD has signed off and has stated they would be eligible for listing on the SHI.
And Councillor Lappin, the final word, I think.
Thank you. So, with DHCD, the marketing they approved was the marketing only for the affordable units. They did not approve the marketing for the market rate. In their rules, it says that the marketing needs to represent everybody, not just for the affordable, but for the market rate also. I can send you the exact
sounds like
if it says that.
Sounds like a little bit of discrepancy. Yeah, it sounds like there was a conversation this morning with DHCD that maybe did not specify that exact same thing. We can figure that out in the,
right.
in the future.
And I understand that DHCD and the planning department want to get as many affordable units on the books as possible, and you know, so do we, but we need to follow rules. A couple things, actually, if we could get some feedback on. There's something listed as a guest suite in one of the plans. Now, a guest suite is, I learned this recently, so I'm learning a lot with this project, is something that in a high-end project, they have a guest suite, so if your grandson comes to visit, they can stay there. So I'm wondering, what is the guest suite in the plan?
Could I just suggest something? Because
yep.
We are kind of now a little bit past the point that I'd hope that we'd be at. Let's discuss whether the committee is interested in working on a board order that would approve this project or deny it. And we're going to ask, I think either way, we're going to hold for a working session at the next time this is up before us to go over that proposed order. And perhaps in the meantime, if there are additional questions that you have or clarifications,
mm-hmm.
not just you, anybody else, we can forward those to the planning department just so that we can, I think that I'm getting the sense, and I might be wrong, I might not be reading the room, but I'm getting the sense that there's a pretty strong consensus here.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Is that okay?
The only other thing, I will
go ahead.
Get my questions answered, but I would like a response from the law department about compliance. And
you're talking about not just the affordable, I think you and Councilor Baker were saying not just about the affordable units, but also the rest of the board order, whether it's been complied with as far as the pedestrian signal and things like that.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, can I just, I think that I would close the public hearing at this time, if there's a motion to close the public hearing. There's a motion from Councilor Laredo. All those in favor of closing the public hearing? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is there any opposed? Any abstentions? 1, 2, 3, 4. I must have miscounted. Oh, I have to count myself. Okay, 8-0. So now, can we take a straw vote on this? Again, this is not binding, but is there a support for this petition? All those in favor, who would vote in favor? This is not a final vote. Is there support? So seeing none, is there... I think that we would be drafting a denial, and maybe just have Solicitor Young briefly speak to that. I know she has some thoughts.
Well, typically what this committee likes to do is propose an approval board order, even if it's not one that gets overwhelming support, and send it forward. I think in this context, you want to prepare a denial board order so that we can look at those findings. I would much prefer to have that come forward as the recommendation of the Land Use Committee in this context so that you don't have the City Council having to stand up in accordance with the Council rules and offer a change to the recommendation of the committee. If the sense of the Land Use Committee is to deny, then we should be preparing a denial board order.
Okay, thank you, Solicitor Young. So I think that's what we'll do, and just before we take a motion to hold, I'll just make a quick comment. So I've listened to all the discussion, I've listened to the presentations, and without repeating folks, I do want to state my concerns, which include the displacement of the folks who used to live at 219 Commonwealth and the concern about that affordability that is being replaced potentially in this particular proposal. So they're not a hugely net positive, although I will admit that these would be deed restricted and in perpetuity, so there is a difference there, but there were some displacements as a result of this. the difference in the comparability is really the thing that gets me the most concerned. I appreciate the developer's attempt to add to the affordability of our housing, and it is intriguing to try to put together a project like this. I'm less concerned about the concentration of workforce and affordable housing in the same place. But I am concerned that this is not the particular time or place to do it with the 4 units from Hancock Estates. I do think that if there's financial viability, if any of those calculations that we heard, which I know are not vetted, are anywhere near the mark, it seems to me that there might be an opportunity to do affordability in a project like this without moving as many of the units. But that, be it as it may, I think we have a straw vote that's for denial. I'm going to ask the planning department and legal to try to put that together for our next meeting. Our public hearing has been closed, and at this time, if we could hold the item. Councilor Laredo has made the motion. All those in favor of holding? Okay, 8-0. Okay, thank you for everybody being here and for all your comments, as well as for abiding by our rules. We're going to move on to the next item now.
And thank you, Chairman.
And thank you to the city staff for being here.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
May I ask a question related to this before we completely disband? It's really for the planning department as well as us and the law. It just seems to me there's lessons learned here, you know, and there's lessons that pertain to the inclusionary housing ordinance that has been drafted, and there's lessons that I think we need to be applying to future special permits. However, the law department's or planning department's analysis of current rules and regulations, however that falls with respect to what the language is in DHCD's rules versus ours,
I think that's a fair comment.
That we want to do here, for example, the advertising, to make sure that no project goes forward that gets, you know, city money and special permits that, you know, is in any way discriminatory. So just, and I think that
I think
there's a list of things.
There's a lot to debrief on this, but I think we should give the planning department credit for this is a board order that was written in 2006, amended a number of times, and they are now following different. They have different requirements in our board orders as far as the marketing of the affordable units and the provision of the temporary occupancy permit. Okay, so moving right along, we have the next item. This is item item 13718. This is petition to allow a multi-unit dwelling at 189 193 Adams Street, 19 Quirk Court. I just want to point out that the brief description that was advertised is not entirely accurate. It's a multifamily development in a business district with greater than 20,000 square gross floor area with a three-story structure 33 feet in height containing 12 units with ground floor units to allow an FAR of 0.99 as well as parking in the setback, minimum stall dimension requirements waived, et cetera, et cetera. So with that, I'll turn to the petitioner's attorney, Mr. Morris. Go ahead. Oh, and I'll just want to acknowledge the presence of Councillor Jay Ciccone, Councillor at Large from Ward 1. Thanks for being here, Jay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Terry Morris. I'm an attorney representing 189-193 Adams Street, LLC. I have offices at 57 Elm Road in Newton. I think it's important to point out at the outset here that obviously this matter's been before you for quite some time. I think I want to start with one observation, and that is that the process works. I know oftentimes you may feel criticized by petitioners and others who criticize the land use process, but I think this, I would like to say that this petition represents how the process would work. It's no secret that when you're presented with land use petitions, how to what to do with a particular piece of property, you're oftentimes presented with competing visions. And in this case, is no different. And those visions, in this particular case, this being a business district, and the business district has certain dimensional controls, that the original project, scope of the project, 18 units, four-story building, really largely stemmed from looking at the parameters, dimensional regulations in this district, and what might be reasonably requested. And despite the fact that we're no longer considering that project and it was deemed to be too large, I think it illustrated there were some good things about that. Everyone loved the design of the building. And in fact, the number of units allowed us to provide a third affordable unit. So, yes, the project was eventually reduced from 18 to 15, and certain changes were made, and ultimately this committee voted, recommended approval. And when it got to the full council, as we all know, it failed to get 16 votes. And one might cynically say, well, the only reason you're back is because you were forced to be here, but in reality, I think the reason why we're back is because the project team took a third look at it and said, well, how can we really try to make this better in light of what we've gone through to that point? And so we did that. And I think the culmination of that, we met with various constituencies, culminating with a meeting on August 29th in which we made a presentation before the Neighborhood Council at the Sons of Italy. The project before you now is, as you know, is 12 units. And the relief that is required is significantly reduced. We are no longer asking relief to exceed the floor area ratio because the project is under the allowable floor area of 1.0. We're no longer asking for a waiver of the parking requirements because we now provide sufficient parking for not only the units, two spaces per unit, but also four spaces for the proposed office space. Even though this property is subject to a waiver because it's a pre-existing use and had commercial retail spaces on the ground floor, which would allow us actually for a waiver, but we're not asking for that. We're not asking for a waiver of the, and the height of the building is at 33 feet. The stories, of course, were long gone in the first go-round. But, of course, now the parking is still below grade. But I think probably one of the most significant things is that the driveway. The driveway was, of course, a source of concern for members of the committee. I know, I believe, the president was at least one member who expressed reservations about the width of the driveway and the access in and out of the property. We went back and took a look at that. And now, as the planning department report states, we now have a travel lane of 20 feet in width, which allows sufficient two-way parking. And I think it's important to put this number in context, because if you look at the traditional subdivision regulations for a city street, you have a 45-foot right-of-way, and you have 8 feet on either side allowed for a berm, sidewalk, and curb. So if you subtract that 16 feet, you're left with 29, and then if you allow parking on one side, you have 9-foot width parking space. You're left with a travel lane on your traditional city street of 20 feet, and that's what we have here. And I think that's a significant change to the project. So, by any metric, this project now, we believe, fits with the neighborhood. There was a larger, during the process, there was comparisons with the project that had been previously approved at 150 Adams Street. And in fact, that project had the average size of those units was 1,173 square feet, and ours is slightly more at 1,190. The lot area per unit requirement, one of the measurements that people use to demonstrate density, the lot area per unit, as you know, the maximum in this zone is 1,200 square feet per unit. And when we came in originally, we were close to that. In fact, the property at 175 Adams Street, the 31-unit project that was built in 1974, was built under that standard and has a lot area per unit of 1,255 right next door, 31 units. The project at Adams Street has 650 square feet per unit. And our project at this point has 1,613 square feet, surely comparable, you know, far in excess of the minimum requirement. That's just another metric by which one would look at the project. I was in a meeting with an esteemed member of the council when we were discussing trying to resolve this, how to improve upon this project, and that council made a statement that there seems to be a lot of concern over the number of units, an inordinate concern over the number of units, when in fact there should be more concern about the number of bedrooms. Because it's the number of bedrooms that actually drive the density in a project, not the number of units. One of the other good things we had about the earlier project was we had a mix of six, you know, six one-bedroom units, six two-bedroom units. We had a mix all across the board. We still have a mix to a lesser degree in this case. But the point is that the average, there's an average, we have 25 bedrooms here for 12 units. And I think that's another measure by which you should take a look at how this project has been improved through the process. Now, does that mean that you're not going to hear opposition? Yes. Unfortunately, I must say that there will still be people here to speak tonight who think the project is too large. They may even suggest a further reduction to 9 units. We considered that, but then determined that if we had 9 units, that those units would simply be bigger units. They'd be more likely to be three-bedroom units, larger, and they're more likely to generate more cars, more traffic, more density. In fact, the number of bedrooms would have been greater than 25. So here we are. We're back. We think we've tried to balance a number of competing interests, and we're hopeful that once you have an opportunity to consider it and discuss it this evening, even after listening to all the comments, that you will agree. With me this evening is our project architectural team, which will speak very briefly. There are 2 points raised in the planning department report, one relative to the accessibility of the affordable unit, and another related to a site improvement related to the bus stop, among other things.
Hi, good evening. Christy Dennis from Innovative Collaborations. Could you go to the next slide, please? As the planning memo mentioned, and as Terry mentioned, the building in many respects is the same project that was previously approved. The major changes have to do, as you mentioned, with the width of the driveway, which narrowed the building somewhat, and the configuration of the parking, which enabled us to get the full 28 spaces. Just to clarify, one item there is 28 total parking spaces. The intent is that it's a 2.0 ratio plus the 4 spaces. So as you mentioned, this project has gone through several iterations, and you can see here where this new proposal before you compares to the building that's there now and what was initially submitted for this project. And you can see that the height has gone from 41 to 33. The stories have gone 3.5 to 3. The parking spaces on site now, it's difficult to count, but as many as 41 cars have been parked there. We're now at a total of 28. And on that point, so the original proposal was 27, and the traffic study was done for that proposal and for that 27 cars. So even though we have a higher parking ratio now, we believe everything in the traffic study is still valid, if not more so, because the wider driveway should, if anything, improve the turn-in and turn-out functionality of that intersection. The setback is the same, but as Terry mentioned, the original project, we were at 36 total bedrooms. In the project, we're now down to 25. The FAR is less than 1, and the unit density is over 1,600. To the question about the accessibility that we saw in the planning memo, we have no problem providing one group A accessible unit, and we're happy to do that. Can you go to the next slide, please? So again, this is just the overall metrics, and again, just to emphasize, the original building that we proposed was over 25,000 square feet. We're now just over 19,000. The lot coverage has gone down to just 65-62, which is about 33-34%, and 12 units, two of which are now inclusionary. And again, you can see how we were able to manipulate the building. As the planning department mentioned, the building itself is essentially the same design that you previously approved, but it did squeeze up a little bit so that at the very tightest point we're 20 feet. At all other points, at most other points, it's actually wider than that. It's wider than that at the intersection with Adams Street. Previously, as you might remember, we had a signal to for the one-way traffic at that narrow driveway. That's no longer necessary. However, there will be a signal at the back parking ramp, which we did narrow to a single lane, which that enabled us to get the additional parking spaces for those office units. It's not my intent to go in any detail through the design, but we're happy to answer any questions. There are other images available if necessary.
I'm just wondering if you could clarify. I see that a number of these comparisons are with the original proposal, but can
yes.
you just compare it with the last approved proposal?
On June 12th when we were here, the project that we had was an FAR of 1.03, so a slightly bigger building than we have now. The coverage was slightly higher. It was 36.3%. At the time, we had 15 units, so the unit density was about 1290. Parking spaces for that proposal were 27. So we're now one more, which we just did so that we could completely meet the zoning requirements. The parking ratio at that time was 1.8 for the 15 units. And the building height was 33. That project had 28 bedrooms. So, as I said, we're now down to 25.
Great. Thank you for doing that.
No problem. As Terry mentioned, the bus shelter, this is something that we were asked about by the planning department about a year ago, early in the project. And actually, hold that for a second. I do want to emphasize we still have unbundled parking, aside from what's required for inclusionary. Because we still feel strongly this is a very walkable neighborhood and the transit access is excellent. So we are providing the unbundled parking because we don't think the tenants of this building necessarily need the 2.0 ratio that's required. We're just providing that because we heard from the neighborhood time and again their concern about the parking. So on the bus shelter, we're providing that because the 558 stop is adjacent to the site. It has always been the developer's intent to construct that and maintain it as part of the building. We feel that will ensure it's more in keeping with the style of the building. We also heard from the neighborhood at the most recent meeting that Terry mentioned that they're concerned about the city maintaining it, and so it's certainly the developer's preference to construct that himself. If there are more questions about that, we're happy to answer them. All right?
Great. Thank you very much. Mr. Cronin? Mr. Marks, did you have anything more, or are you standing up? No? Okay.
Just one point I want to expand upon the bus shelter. In discussions with our architect, they actually did, in the earlier presentation, they did a nice pictorial of the street furnitures and so forth. The $25,000 figure that appears in the board order is actually largely drawn out of thin air. We're actually... the average bus shelter is cost between 10 and 12,000 with solar at 14.5. What we would propose is that condition simply state that we'd be responsible for the bus shelter and that the style and design, the final approval will be with the planning department, as would any landscape plan, rather than have a fixed amount. That would mean also a change in one of the later conditions that also talks about making a payment before you get the building permit.
And that would be built at what time? Would that be built with the building, or would it be something subsequent?
No, it would be one of, just as the landscaping is installed after the building is completed, the bus shelter would be, because that's part of the landscape, really.
Okay.
Especially on the street. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Cronin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the only things we could add to that would be that the building was pulled back from the northern lot line. The last iteration had a side setback of 9.3 feet. The proposed setback is 14.3 feet. And there was also an increase in the width of the curb cut from Adams Street to 24 feet, which allows two vehicles, one to exit and one to enter simultaneously. In a previous iteration, that had a little slip space for one vehicle to exit, and then one for one vehicle to pause and wait to continue to enter the site. Other than that, I think that covers the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Great. And just to clarify, so the relief that now is being required or is requested, it's not a 20,000 square foot building, it's not a height issue, it's not parking waiver, so is it primarily, what is the relief that's being requested at the time?
I can go through
the memo.
Chairman. So the relief, do I need to read to yourself?
Yeah, do you mind going through the slides just for everybody to see?
Sure. The relief is as follows: to allow a multifamily dwelling with ground floor units, to allow a three-story structure 33 feet in height, to allow parking in a setback, to allow waivers to the parking stall dimensions, to allow a reduction in the minimum width of a maneuvering aisle, to allow an FAR of 0.99, and to waive the requirements pertaining to parking facilities containing more than five stalls, specifically lighting and landscaping.
Okay. And the parking stall dimensions is 8.5 by 19 instead of 9 by 19.
Correct.
Okay. And the three-story structure, because it's non-conforming, does not... It's currently a three-story structure.
It's currently a four-story structure. Three-story structures require a special permit in the business to zone.
Got it. Okay. Councilor Alcavaz. Do you have something, Mr. Mark?
Yeah, there's no, to allow an FAR 0.99, there's no. You only, when you exceed 1.0, we don't need relief for that. 1.0 is allowed by right.
We'll check on that. Thank you, Mr. Mark. Councilor Aqua.
Does the planning department feel that the amount of parking being provided is appropriate or excessive?
The amount of bike parking?
Car parking.
I'm just joking.
So it's about parking.
In larger developments, not sure the number of units you want to say, but we do typically see parking waivers, and we do see parking waivers close to village centers. I think this would be a situation where we would entertain a parking waiver, but given the concern over parking and the amount of guest parking, I think the parking is appropriate.
Mr. Chair,
I think as a matter of policy in this city, to be providing two parking spaces per unit when it's a mixed-use development near transit, near the village center, is bad planning. And it is going to increase congestion in the area, because when you put more parking, you induce more cars onto the road. And this almost makes you not want to vote for the project, and I would strongly encourage the developer to reduce the amount of parking here.
Ms. Morris?
I think the President
and President Barrera.
So I have to disagree with my colleague from Ward 2 on this one, as I think he probably expects I would. This is it's a very dense area with a lot of limitations on parking already. And we have an opportunity to put parking underground and in the back in an unobtrusive manner that's not going to in any material way take away from any significant open space. And I think it's great that the developer's uncoupling the units from the parking. So if a particular unit owner doesn't, a renter does not need the parking, that parking will be available for others in the neighborhood. This neighborhood has a real issue with that, and I think anything we can do to get the cars off the streets behind the projects in an unobtrusive manner in a neighborhood that doesn't have sufficient parking is good. And I don't necessarily agree with the argument, Councilor Auchincloss, that by building parking spaces, you're thereby encouraging people to drive. People are going to drive their cars, and you're providing an opportunity for them or others in the neighborhood. So I think it's quite appropriate to have this here.
Well, I just would point out that in the last iteration,
yeah,
we had proposed an alternative where we were going to have less parking, but we had a designated overflow. and in a review in a year, that if it were necessary, we were going to expand it, and the committee rejected that option.
So there are different views on this, so we you're hearing about them. Other concerns, Councilor Greenberg. And then, I'm sorry, we'll get to public comment if there's anybody here to speak, and I know Councilor Ciccone also wants to speak. Go ahead, Councilor Greenberg.
I have to agree with President Laredo. This was a major concern with the neighborhood. The parking situation in Adams Street is very difficult, and I believe that although it does sound to be excessive, that it was an important condition of the neighborhood to have that parking available for the tenants and for the two commercial spaces.
I do think that it's an open question because, as planners will say, you know, you build it, they will come. At the same time, we know here in Newton a lot of people come with their cars. So I think it's a really challenging policy discussion that we should probably have at the Zoning and Planning Committee at some point. Councilor Ciccone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. Just a couple of things I want to bring up. I mean, I don't want to beat this to death. We've heard it a bunch of times. I know the project has been a little small. Originally, 18 units, down to 15 units. Now we're down to 12. Myself, I was at the original meeting that we were told 9 to 12 units. Okay. The neighborhood heard 9 units. That's what the neighborhood loud and clear. That's what they wanted. We've been going back and forth. I myself have had meetings putting the neighborhoods together, trying to come to a consensus here and a place where we can say, hey, you know what? We did work hard and we came to something. Well, we never came to anything, okay? And, you know, like I said, the biggest project that's happened in Mount Anthem in the last 25 years was Mr. DeVito's project down at, I believe it's 150 Adams Street, okay, which is down in the village center, abutting another apartment building, not abutting other houses. It's apples to oranges when people try to compare these two projects. The only thing that I can tell you is Mr. DeVito's building that was put there, we held him to put all his parking on his property because of that fact of not having any parking in Mount Anthem. We have a problem down there, and these people did address it. These give them their due. They did work very hard, and they did they brought it down to a place where it's at least palatable, okay? Having 18 units there, and I don't think there is another place in the city that's any more dense than where these people are talking about. And it just happens to be my neighborhood. What do you want, us on top of each other? It's dense. We're very dense as it is, and they're just trying to make it more and more dense. The people that lived there on Adams Street, and I know just about all of them, okay, pretty much. I've talked with them. They don't want a street full of apartment buildings. And that's what it comes to. And, you know, I know they bring up that 31-year apartment building built in 1974 abuts this property. It's in the back. It's not on the street. It's in the back. You wouldn't even know the properties abutted one another. Okay? So, anyway, we could go on and on and on about the things that I've talked about, but I just want to make it perfectly clear. It's a very dense area. We already have down the street another 6-unit building. The 9-unit building that Mr. DeVito got, another 9-unit building that's going on Watertown Street at the barber shop. 6 units were just put in down on Dalby Street, and now there's a proposal because, well, I'll be the first to admit, I made a big stink about a guy who was talking about trying to put 10 more units across from the soccer club here. Okay, so we're in negotiations there, but he's still putting he wants to put more than what is there. You know, after a while, enough's enough. There's a lot of people in my area. Okay, if you can show me a denser area where they're putting these kind of projects in anywhere else in the city, show me, I'll be okay, I'm game. It's not happening anywhere else because it just isn't happening. All right, I have another 55 units that's being proposed down the JFK Circle. Where's it end? Okay, it's a very dense area. These people don't want to have people looking, out their bedroom windows into their bedroom windows. They've had it. You can only build so much. And these people, especially the ones that are, and they happen to be my neighbors, who've called me, talked with me, seen me at the coffee shop, and said to me, Jay, enough. So, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Can I just ask, Councilor Scarni, I know that you had some concerns about the driveway at the last iteration. Do you have any thoughts on that now?
They did a great job. They cut, you know, they cut the building down size. I think it's 7 feet, which gave it that, you know, more room for, you know, apparatus to get in and out of there. I just will make a note of, I don't know if anybody's aware of this, a fire engine couldn't get down Quirk Court 2 weeks ago. There was a fire on Quirk Court, and the fire engine did not get on Quirk Court. And that was brought to my attention. Somebody called to tell me that because of me stating my issues with the fire department and getting in and out of there. So, yeah, that was 2 weeks ago. And they have the protocol with the fire department now anyway is they wouldn't go in there, that they would have the engine fight it from the street. So it's a moot point.
Okay.
But thank you.
Sure. And when we talk about density, we're talking about number of units or bedrooms, not just size. Because, I mean, the size of this is actually smaller, if I understand correctly. The height is smaller. The volume is smaller.
The unit size isn't so much what is concerning me. It's the amount of units.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify your comment.
If I bring you down there, Mr. Chairman, and I show you what's there and what's being proposed now.
I just went by again.
Including the 55 units at JFK Circle. I mean, it's...
You're talking about the whole neighborhood then?
Everything. Okay. It's just, you know, it, how many more units are you going to put there?
Yeah, but...
You know? Thank you.
Sure. That's the number of units you're concerned about. Does anybody else want to comment on the... I'm going to open it up to public comments for the moment, unless other people have comments, questions. All right. Who's here to speak on this item? You don't have to if you don't want to, but you can come on down. We've got 3 minutes. We're going to be very generous tonight. But only three per person. I do.
Thank you. Yeah, you can give me some extra seconds anyway. All right. My name is Peter Serkla. I live 183 Erem Street. Everybody knows me now here, anyway. I can say this now. I live there. What is important that we must build so many residential units in our neighborhood? The site is surrounded on the three sides by residential use. The project don't fit into the neighborhood. It's a big project. The developers say the plan is for the project to be an apartment building, but the plan might have to change after construction based on the market conditions. As soon as will be before the project is converted to condominium, nobody knows. Apartment building ownership and management is a special skill. It requires it. On a financial plan, the developer does not like to carry long-term debt. I think restricting the opinion for a new project. At the very least, you should put a restriction against the conversation of the condominium in your decision. 5. Commercial projects pay twice the tax, debt after valuation. As residential projects in the use on a small portion of our early municipal budget expense. The Newton Taxpayer Association says that is most Newton project.
Roger, let me read it for you.
Yeah, it's better for me. Because I'm a bit nervous, and I do
it's know. Okay. I'm just going to speak on behalf
sure,
of them.
Sure, please. Thank you. That's very sweet.
Spoken English, Ken Hagen.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
That's, you know,
let's try and make it clear.
Yeah,
okay. The developer says that the plan is for the project to be an apartment building, but that plan may have to change after construction based on market conditions. How soon will it be before the project is converted to condominiums? Apartment building ownership and management is a special skill and requires its own financial plan. Developers do not like to carry long-term debt as it restricts their options for new projects. At the very least, you should put a restriction against conversion to condominiums in your decision. Commercial projects pay twice the tax based on valuation as residential projects and use only a small portion of our yearly municipal budget expenses. The Newton Taxpayers Association says that in most Newton projects, the developer underestimates the number of children that will occupy new residences by half. This building doesn't fit on the lot, and without using a passageway easement created in 1867 on a part of Rogers land, the passageway was not designed or intended as a driveway for 12 residential units and 1,000 square feet of commercial space, and is an improper extension of the use of the passageway. The project could not pass the necessary requirements to get this building approved without using the passageway. And finally, why do we have all of our zoning regulations if they're going to be waived whenever a developer wants to build a big project? For this project, the developer is asking for waivers that will adversely affect the neighborhood. You want to make a project automobile unfriendly, and the tenants will want the opposite. Seniors from our neighborhood cannot afford the rent for these new apartments. People who don't work in Boston will need cars to get to work. You want people to give up their second car. Who will park their second car on the street? What street will they park on? And that's pretty much it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
We want to do more. Thank you.
Anyone else? Sure. Anyone else? And then we're going to close this.
Do you really have to do that thing? I won't take that long.
Sure. Go ahead.
So I'm Terry Farrell. I live 50 Cook Street, Newton, Mass. I took offense to Terry Morris's comments, or even his opposition. Well, you know what? I am not going to say my age, but I've lived on Nonantum all my life. I know the traffic, I know the density, and I know something has to be created on that property, but it started off wrong. They met with us, they listened to us, they went and did what they thought would work for them. So we live there. There's density. I'm concerned about the density. The building is too big for the land. They're trying to fit this building onto this land. 9 units, or like you said, well, there could be 3 bedrooms. Well, what's that supposed to do? We're going to slap your hand because we're going to go down to 9. There's 30 people, say, extra, that's going to come to Adams Street. Cars, 1 or 2, are going to be there. Down the street, we're getting buried down here, and I know something has to go in there, but it's too bad that they couldn't work with the neighborhood and listen to some of our concerns. They wouldn't have been in the position they are in now. And I just want to say on the... with the city council, with their questions that they had, it doesn't say on there about construction. It says Monday to Friday, but it is on their stated Saturday from 8 to 5, so there really shouldn't be any construction Saturday or Sunday. And then on the snow, who's going to do that driveway? There's nothing clarified about who's going to do that driveway, probably the driveway. Thank you.
You're talking about the draft board order. You wanted to speak to snow and construction.
Right.
Thank you. I think you're the last one. Come on down.
Simon French, 47 Glen Avenue. When this was denied, it was my understanding that when this came back here, significant changes were going to be required. I don't see them. On the primary issues were setbacks. You've still got the one side where it's still 5 feet and 33 foot high. As far as I can see, the height hasn't changed. And quite frankly, it's quite disappointing because I don't see where this has changed at all. It should be noted that the meeting that was held in the Knights of Columbus, I think one person was in favour of this project. The rest of the group didn't like it, and I don't think that's been reported, but I I can't remember. There's at least 20 people up there who said they didn't like the project. It hasn't changed. And you guys should know. And I don't understand where this project goes next. I have one question though. Is it a brand new project? Is it a brand new hearing? Or is it a continuation of the existing?
This is new.
It's new. It doesn't seem to present so much attention as a new project. It just seems to be skipped over then.
Well, we've passed through a lot of the issues. So, as you say, it's not very different. So, we have kind of heard a lot about all the issues that are still in there and some that are not. So, I think that's why it might feel that way. But it is a new petition.
Okay. And one last thing. Terry mentioned about this, though. I don't know if you guys get into this, but maintenance of that driveway, it's obviously shared. It's obviously getting a lot more usage. I don't know if Roger would be responsible for half of that driveway. I don't know if you can do something about that in your board order.
Responsibility for the driveway?
Well, obviously it's going to get used a lot, and I assume somewhere in the deed restriction says about maintenance of that particular driveway. Is he going to be responsible for half of that driveway?
That might be an issue for land use, whatever, not land use committee, but for land law, but we'll find out from our council. Thank you. Okay. All right, we're going to take two. Is it Mr. Harrington? How many more? Just give me a show of hands so I can get a sense, because we're not going to go past 10 o'clock.
I'll be really short.
All right, so then the other two. Go ahead.
My name is Felicia Lucchetti, and I live on Adams Street. I just want to emphasize again the density, the traffic on the street, and the parking. It's enormous. Try to park or drive through that street. I think we should try it. It's a certain traffic time. It's terrible. I watched it a few weeks ago when they had the fire on Cork Street with the fire department that night so can all get into Cork Street. They had a park on Murphy Court and go through the back of the restaurant with the water hose. So it said that's a dense that place of area there. So it is like follow up with your fire department and check it out and just reinforce out the density of that neighborhood, especially that street.
Great, thank you very much, ma'am. Welcome.
My name is Deborah Visco. I'm at 153 Adams Street. I apologize in advance if I start coughing. Just to follow up on a few things Terry mentioned, when the prior proposal was brought to the full city council, there were a couple amendments that were brought up, and one addressed the driveway and taking care of the snow, and it would be the developer's responsibility. It also talked about construction, and the city council made an amendment not to have construction on Saturday. So I don't know where those issues fall, given that I think you just defined this as a new project. So
we certainly will consider those as we discuss the board order. Yep. Thanks for bringing that up.
I know the developers made changes to the plan. The driveway is better than what it was before. I had a real problem with it being a single-lane driveway. It's now a 20-foot driveway with dual access, which is great. I still feel this project is much too big. It should have been downscaled to about 8 units. It's massive. And on Adams Street, and being a resident of Adams Street for all these years, it's just not the Adams Street I grew up with. It's not houses anymore. We're dealing with apartments, townhouses, multiple complexes. I live right across from 150 Adams Street, which I've mentioned before. I see the impact it's had on the street, and it's not good. And I wish something would change moving forward instead of bringing these new developments on. And I feel this is just the middle of it. I think there's more to come, and I really think it needs to be careful decisions going forward. Thank you.
Your address was 150, did you say?
153 Adams Street. I'm across from the 150 project.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the Changes Committee. My name is Peter Harrington. I reside at 157 Lowell Avenue in Newtonville. And I've come here this evening to speak against this petition for two or three reasons. One, The building does not sit on the lot. The building is shoehorned in. The lot is unusually shaped. It's an amalgamation of three or four lots, and it's a narrow lot. The developer is in trying to squeeze out as much as they can, has a building that you wouldn't accept in your neighborhood on that kind of lot. If it was a different lot, a bigger lot, a wider lot, the building might fit very well. On this lot, it does not fit. It's slam bang up against houses on Quirk Court, and it's right up against Mr. Checkler's house on Adams Street. Secondly, in order to make this project work, the developer has to use the property of 183 Adams Street. There is a passageway there. Now, I don't know what you think a passageway is. My opinion is that it is a walkway and an access. If those of you that have been to Boston, you may have been to Pie Alley, you know what that is. It's a passageway. It's the most famous passageway we have in the area. But when this was developed in 1867, there were a couple of house lots out and back and a couple lots up front, and they made this passageway for the people to get back. They need the passageway in order to do this, otherwise the building doesn't fit on the lot. And they're going to take what was designed for small access and turn it into a street. It was going to have all the aspects of a street, from what I understand. There's going to be two-way traffic, and there's going to be a lot more cars.
You have 1 more minute.
All right, I'm going to skip what I was going to say. I just want to talk a minute about density. You know, there's a theory, I don't know whether it's here in the city council, but certainly seems to be with the planning department, that where the land is dense, the city should build increased density, bigger buildings. Well, the people that live in that dense area, at least from everything I've heard, are opposed to having this highly dense, urbanized change to their neighborhood. The property that was built down there was built back in the early 1800s through the 1800s. And in those days, people built smaller houses on smaller parcels of land. In those days, the city was divided between those with money and the workers. The workers worked in Nonantum, they worked in Upper Falls, and they worked in Lower Falls. And out in Wavin, in West Newton, Newtonville, Newton Center, there were farms.
Peter, I respect you too much, but it's already 3.5 minutes, so could you wrap it up in 30 seconds?
I can. So I ask you to rethink your theory on density, that this village, Nonantum, a number of the villages where there is dense housing should be recategorized to put in greater density. The people that live there think they're already in a very dense neighborhood. And sometime when I have more time, I'll come back and tell you a story about how the people who developed the city brought in the people from East Boston and South Boston, sold them 2,500 square foot lots, and then when they went to build a house, they said, oh, you can't build it on 2,500 square feet. You need 5,000 or 7,500, and we have the lot adjacent to you is just we have available, and it's only going to cost you 30 times more than you paid for the 2,500 square foot lot. And there are plans in the Registry of Deeds that will back that up. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mr. Harrington, former Representative Harrington. Okay, so discuss. Is there an appetite for approval? I'm seeing a couple of nods. Mr. Leaker. Yes, sir. Actually, Councilor Greenberg also put up her hand, but you got the microphone first. Would you like to hear from her first? Would that be all right? Councilor Greenberg. Oh, you're going to move to close the public hearing? Okay. All those in favor of closing the public hearing? 8 in favor. Okay. Councilor Akhlas, you were going to move approval?
I'm happy to move approval. I would also, though, say that I think we should add back to the board order the same conditions we had in the previous board order. I actually voted against the restriction on construction on Saturday because I think we wanted, in general, it's better to get it done faster. However, I think we should just add back the conditions that we had and not try to relitigate each one of these and just recognize that that was the sense of the committee at that time.
And the snow was there? Go ahead, Councilor.
Was there?
I think that was your...
If I could, Mr. Chairman, the reason why we asked this Saturday, we have one of the oldest synagogues in the state, and they have services on Saturdays there, and for them, they don't take cars there. They walk to the synagogue, and they'd be walking by this construction site, and we just thought it'd be a bad idea. That's the Jewish folks' holy day, their Sabbath, and we figured if we have our Sunday, they should have their Saturday. Should be fair with that.
Yeah, and for that reason, I was just saying we should just do it the same way, just have the conditions carry over.
Can we just, do we know what those conditions were, the snow and the construction? We have that from the board discussion.
I only saw that construction hours were restricted in that there was a requirement for a snow storage plan, but I'm not sure. I couldn't find the details of those items.
Well, so we can get that.
Okay.
Certainly we heard some speakers in favor of that. Anybody? You made a motion to approve? Councilor Markowitz?
I just wanted to say, I was the one that put this back on reconsideration, and at the time I said my expectation was that it would be significantly smaller. I appreciate that a number of adjustments have been made in reduction of massing and comparing it, the existing structure against what's proposed here. And I know I'm probably in some strange territory here, but I am very sympathetic to the plight, and I'll use the word plight, of kind of being in a place where change is happening around you, and albeit that change is inevitable, and maybe for the greater good in the long run, you're the one who has to kind of absorb the freight of that or the cost of that. So I'm going to abstain tonight, but I am leaning no on this one. I'm probably the only one here who would vote against it, and I'll spend my time over the next couple of days talking to other sympathetic colleagues, but I'm sympathetic to what's happening in Nonantum. I recognize that the neighborhood's transition. The neighborhood I live in is going to transition. They're all going to, for better or for worse, move ahead, but I still am not. There's something about this that still doesn't meet the mark for me. And I also say incidentally too, although again I know things change, this is a business unit zone, and you may recall a month or so ago, 2 months ago, we docketed an item that we then decided to withdraw, not withdraw, but set aside, subject to ZAP's ongoing work on zoning reform, but. Our proposal had to deal with no more than 50% of residential development in a business unit zone for any given project. And I recognize, again, Adams Street is probably post-commercial in some ways, but there's a spirit of that, too, that continues to haunt me a little bit. And so for those reasons, as I sort those out, I'm just still, even though this has been going on for months, I'm not prepared to cast a positive vote for it.
Okay. Well, I think it's fair to say that this is a challenging project. It has been from the beginning, and I don't disagree that there are concerns related to the density as well as the whole process that brought us to this point. I do appreciate that that you made it possible for this to be reconsidered, because I think that that's something that we should try to strive for, at least to have. Petitioners know that they're not going to get approval, and they need to kind of work it out. I think they've tried to work it out. I'm also still uncertain as to how I'm going to vote on this one. I do think that as we increase density in certain parts of the city, we're creating a lot of pain, and we don't have to. But that said, I think that we do have the work ahead of us to put together a board order that is able to be voted on up or down at the council. So if folks are ready. I know it's early in the evening. Maybe we could quickly look at the findings.
Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification and maybe try to move this process along. Is it our intent to basically take what we had before us before? And are there any significant changes at all?
I think everybody has the proposed board order in their packets.
I mean, my point is, Mr. Chair, we spent a fair amount of time crafting the board order, I think.
Yeah, maybe we could just have planning go through and say
if
anything that's different.
Different, I'd like to know about it. Otherwise, I certainly understand why people are going to vote against this. It makes logical. They're entitled to do so, but in terms of crafting a board order, personally, I don't feel the need to go through the same findings we've gone through already.
Yeah, I think it's slightly different preamble because of the changed project. Do you want to take it from there, Mr. Cronin?
The restrictions or the amendments that were done at the full council, the construction hours restriction and the snow storage plan, I can work with the clerk's office and get the specific details on those. And then there's also the bus shelter.
Okay. There's also something, the two inclusionary zoning units, did we get an answer from the petitioner? I know there was a recommendation for planning to be one of them to be a three-bedroom.
Our Director of Housing and Community Development, Amanda Berman, who was here earlier, reviewed the project, and based on the distribution of units throughout the total project, said that the appropriate distribution of affordable units should be one two-bedroom and one three-bedroom unit. We're not including that as a condition because that is something that is required as part of the ordinance and would be reviewed and required at the time of building permit anyway.
So, but if that's going to be required, why don't we put it in as a condition?
Sure.
So, is that something that you're prepared to do?
Not sure of the question, Mr. Chairman. What is it?
Sounds like our inclusionary zoning ordinance would require you to have a one two-bedroom and one three-bedroom in this project for inclusionary zoning.
I don't read the ordinance that way. The ordinance actually says that the affordable units have to be a certain percentage in size of the market rate units. These units, we're providing units over 1,100 square feet. Each of these two-bedroom units is over 1,100 square feet. It's close to 88% of the size of the market value when the ordinance only requires 60.
That's size, but the unit mix is what I think we're hearing.
We have 7 two-bedroom units, 2 one-bedroom units, and three-bedroom units. I don't know how they basically say that we're required to have 1 3 when there's only 3 of them in the project, and there are 7 two-bedrooms, and the average bedroom size for the project is 2.
So that's a no, I think, I'm hearing.
No.
Okay. All right. Is there anything further that's different in the board order? Why don't we just quickly run through it? We have to. So that was number 2. That was condition number 2. Number 3, yes?
This is going to be placed on second call, I expect, anyways, but I, for one, would like a clear answer on the inclusionary zoning requirement before we vote on this. I'm not comfortable with, a later debate between the developer and the planning department as to what's appropriate or not. I'm not looking for an answer tonight, but I do think before the full council takes this up, we ought to have an answer to this. And if the planners are saying one thing and the petitioner is saying something else, and we think the planners are right, then what the planners say goes in the board order.
I'm just taking your point one step further. I'm not inclined to do work at the board level on this, so
I'm not either. I'd send it back. No, I'd like to move forward because if Ms. Kara and her team can persuade Mr. Morris or the other way around that one is correct, we can move this forward. If not, then maybe it gets sent back after it goes to full council.
Yeah, I got to tell you, my intention with this item is not to take it up again. So if we're going to be disappointed. We're going to be voting against. I'm going to be voting against it. So whether or not we hold it and get the board order clear, I think that this is...
I prefer to get it out of committee and vote it up or down at the full council, but my point is I do want clarity on this issue. If you'd rather not, it's your prerogative, Mr. Chair.
Is there the desire to move this forward? Are people prepared to take this up on second call? All right. Let's finish the board order then, to the extent that we can. So if there are any other changes, Mr. Cronin, compared to the previous board order?
Nothing substantive, Mr. Chairman.
Is there also a lighting issue that was raised in the memo?
There was, but that's something that I think can be handled prior to the issuance of the building permit. We've done it before with other petitions.
What's the sticking point there?
Just to see if the petitioner can reduce the lighting level on the northern part of the building.
And are you not able to do that?
Yes.
Could you state for the record, please?
I'm informed by our architectural team that we are able to accommodate that condition.
Glad to hear it. Thank you. And you're ready to pay for these police details?
In the interest of, we're also prepared to basically be responsible for the snow removal on the driveway, since that was an issue raised by the neighbors.
Yep.
We will take responsibility for that as well.
Okay. So there's a motion to approve subject to second call. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All those opposed? 2 abstentions. Okay. All right, we're adjourned for now. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.